Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World on Against the Grain, Freedomize Radio. We have got a friendly with us. I'm actually taking a course with this gal. Taking a couple courses now. And invited her on the show to talk about her experiences and her life and things like that. I got a little bit of a taste into this woman's life, and to be entirely honest, she reminds me of one of my absolute best friends in the whole freaking wide world. So, we're welcoming Mama Cat onto the show today. Mama Cat, is you here?
Yes, I am here. How are you doing?
There you is. I is good.
Alrighty, righty.
Nice.
Am I good?
Nice. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I've been doing well. I had to exterminate a bunch of little baby mice from my Suburban, but, you know, I guess you just have to do that sometimes.
Yeah. It sucks, but it's just like, you know, kind of a nuisance that can lead into a pretty serious health problem.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely health problems with that. But I was like, I asked them to leave. They wouldn't leave. I used peppermint oil. They seem to like that. I've decided to just go down to it and use pine salt. So I walk into my Suburban now, and it's like, woo! So hopefully that'll get them out of there.
Hopefully. Vacate the premises or else we will have to take the next step. And you don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with that. So just vacate the premises.
Right? I was like half tempted to think about buying a snake just to get him to crawl into the small spaces.
You can just like, where are you? You just go outside and get one if you're like in an area that is not of the land of ice and snow like myself. But then again, just be careful what kind of like noodle you go and get, because some of those noodles are hard. Nope.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are some straight danger
rattles.
Noodles.
Yeah, some of them have rattles. We have the green mamba here. And basically, it's the most poisonous rattlesnake, supposedly, in America. So, but they're very beautiful. Very beautiful. They're really pretty green. And they're
nice.
Very docile unless you piss them off. So, you know. But the last thing I want around my dogs in my Suburban while I'm trying to sleep is a rattlesnake. I used to milk them when I was younger, but not anymore. I'm kind of like retired on that.
Yep. Sounds a lot like my friend Will. He used to go and catch. There was some sort of specific snake you would go and catch for some local lab or something. Everybody ended up getting in trouble for doing it. But I'll tell you what, the lab was white overexcited when he used to do that because they could never actually ever find anybody. So, you know, not great to have a couple of teenage boys running around doing the job for you. But the boys didn't mind. They got a little bit of cash, and they got to catch snakes, which is what they did. And the lab got all the things they wanted, and everybody was happy until, you know, but, you know, the government ruins everything. But that's just my opinion.
Oh, yeah. The government does rule everything. So, yeah, I concur with you on that one.
Yeah, they ruin everything. Always and forever. All right. Let's talk about you, man. Let's talk about you. Where does this all start? Like, I got a little piece of everything that you had to say in the Marketing Mastery course. For those that are listening right now, Mama Cat and I, we are enrolled in a Marketing Mastery course together in Enterprise Academy. And Gandalf the Grateful is the one who is teaching us. We are currently learning how to find things like our ideal client, working on things like our hero's journey, working on things like, you know, our specific branding and things like that in order to be able to get high ticket sales, in order to be able to find the people that we want to work with doing our business, be it coaching or whatever. Right now we're focusing on coaching because a bunch of us are a bunch of coaches. But essentially, you could use these things for anything. But finding, essentially, we're finding the clients that we want to be able to work with, that we want to grow with and develop relationships with, And at the same time, finding people that understand our value as coaches and entrepreneurs, as well as their value as, you know, like being the patrons and people who are exchanging those values. And to find higher ticket, higher value people to work with. That's, I guess that's one way we could put it. But yeah, we're taking that course together. And if you guys want more information on that, we can hook you up with the Enterprise Academy. We're going to be having the enrollment course coming up again here soon, I think, soon-ish. So if you're interested in that, definitely hit us up and we can direct you to Gandalf. But right now, again, I want to explore more into what we call in the class your hero's journey. Where did this all begin? Like, you've had a wild go. How did it start?
Well, okay. So I was born. I was born in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I'm an Army brat. I've gone over all over the world, thankfully, to my dad and my mom. I was able to expand my horizons and think outside the box because I wasn't stuck in one little town in one little way. So, and I was exposed to a lot of different types of communities. I was, according to my grandma, born with a bill. And I can
born with a bill?
See things. A veil.
What does that mean?
A bell over the eye. So
a bell over
the
eye.
Means
what does that mean?
So you have a milky sheen over your eyes.
Oh.
When you're a child. Yeah. So I didn't know what that meant. And all I knew is that I was very intuitive. And I could see things and energies that a lot of people can't. And growing up, I was the outcast. I was the little redhead, little freckled face, little girl that, had an ability to see things and speak to things that, aren't in certain frequencies of human beings. I say we just shut it off when we shut it off when we're young. We're taught to shut it off. So everybody has this ability. Not special. Everyone is special. Everyone has this ability. It's just that some of us are more intuitive than others is because we think outside the box. So anyway, one day I'm flying this sign. So one day, a couple of months ago, I'm flying this sign because I went on this journey where after I lost my daughter, I lost a lot of hope about healing. I felt that I wasn't worthy to heal if I could not heal my own daughter. I felt that there must be something wrong with me if God isn't like helping me just heal my child and having to watch her die and having to live with that. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to just do my own thing. God, you know, I guess you don't exist. And for a while there, I was just existing to, you know, raise my kids, my other kids that were, you know, still present. And did the 9-to-5, did the, you know, 12-hour shifts, did anything I could do to pay the bills. Before that, I had my own shop. I had my own business, like reading cards and just helping to clean. That's my dogs that you're hearing talking right now, by the way. they're agreeing,
no
I guess. I went on this journey. I did it's called a sweat lodge because I was really angry after my daughter died. And for years, I harbored that anger. So I was invited to a sweat lodge. I did that. And I was blessed to have all the answers that I want answered. And I went in like a lion and I came out like a lamb. And I realized that, it wasn't my fault, and it wasn't God denying me, and that, So I went and found my way, and once my kids were old enough to go, I was already planning to leave. I had to get on the road and be like a little gypsy. I had everything, you know, ready for it, and Hurricane Harvey came, and boom, everything was gone. So I ended up in a park, and I was like, I'm going to either OD here on drugs, or I'm just going to, I need to go. So I, with the encouragement of friends, I took the last $200 that I had in my pocket, and I took a dart and threw it at a map, and ended up in Roswell, New Mexico. And from there, I traveled with a backpack by myself, a 50-year-old woman. Well, I was 40-something, not 50. But, yeah, traveling by myself with a backpack. I ran into some rainbow people who are travelers, and started traveling with them to what was called the Love Gathering. And then from there, progressed. And the whole time I'm sitting in this park with my backpack, because I lost my dad, lost my dog, lost my home. Me and my mom had gotten into it. We don't really get along that well. And I was like, you know, what do you want me to do, God? What is it that you want me to do? And I kept having the verse where Jesus tells his disciples, he tells them to just get rid of everything. If you believe in my Father, if you believe in me and you want to follow me, just get rid of everything. Get rid of your purse, get rid of your shoes, get rid of your clothes. Just go out. Just go out, and you'll be fine with everything. And I was like, okay. So I did that. And I went on the road, and unarmed, and only armed with the Lord's word and faith, armed with faith is what I like to say. And I've journeyed for 6 years, and it has been, well, it has been a hell of a journey. I ended up going, like, this is my fourth time in New Mexico. The first time that I was here, I met Rainbow Family. Second time I was here, I got stranded with Rainbow Family. And then the third time, the same place, I ended up meeting a different Rainbow Family. And it ended up, after 2 years in Oregon, I ended up back here because it's always been a safe place. I actually went all the way to the East Coast because I was like, that's it, I'm over it. So I've never been to the East Coast, went to the East Coast, and my truck started breaking down. And I was like, well, I'm not going over these big old bridges anymore, because I kept having this dream about a bridge collapsing. And it's so funny because as soon as I got here, a bridge collapsed and Biden was there. And it was like really, really like, I was like, that was my dream. I knew that was going to happen. I'm so glad I was not on that bridge. And thankfully nobody was hurt on the bridge. But, I missed that one, thankfully, because I don't know what I would have done with three dogs and me going down a bridge. You know, like, no, I couldn't handle that. Who do I save? So, anyway, ended up here again. Every time I fixed something in my truck, something else would break down, And I was like, I was just so angry. I was like, okay, universe, all right, get the ball rolling. I know you want me to meet somebody. I know there's some reason I'm here. Just do it. Just show me why I'm here. I'm impatient. It's been 2 years. Let's get her done. And I kept running into Gandalf. The weirdest places. I'm flying a sign that says rather be working. And he came up to me and he's like, oh, you'd rather be working. What would you rather be doing? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm not going to do porn and I'm not going to have sex. So, you know, I said, but I can do it. I didn't tell him that. But I'm thinking that to myself because he's all determined and he's got this energy that's just like imposing, you know, not imposing, but it's just intense and it's fiery. And it's just like, and I'm like sitting here when he's walking up to me, I'm like thinking, is he going to tell me this is his corner? I mean, because I've had that happen. I've had some weird things happen. And no, he's not. He's got his little son with him and his son I had seen like the day before. And I was like, oh, I recognize this kiddo. He lives out on the mesa. And that's where I live. I don't live in town. I live off-grid, totally. I've actually been living off-grid for, like, the last 4.5 years. Well, 6 years, actually, because before I had a Suburban, I was gifted that. Before I had that, I was living in a tent. So, yeah, I come up from a backpack to a Suburban. Before that, I had a van, and then that got kind of taken away from me. And then I had a Subaru, which was really great, and I rolled it through a swarm of locusts. That was a crazy story. And I had to get rid of my bunny. I had a bunny and a 3 dogs I was traveling with. So her name was Miss Beth. I gave her to a really cool humane society that actually took bunnies. And ended up, like I said here, met Standoff, kept running into him. Out of all the people, I mean, like, just weird. I'd be talking about him, and bam, he would show up. And it was like, I'm not in my car because my truck's all broken down. So I'm hitchhiking to get into town, and I kept running into him, and then I was like, okay, universe, obviously, I'm talking to a friend of mine on the phone. I'm telling him about Gandalf. And I ran into I'm riding with other people, and I'm telling them at the same time as I'm telling my friend on the phone about Gandalf. We just pulled up to Walmart, and lo and behold, Gandalf parked right beside us. And I'm like, that's the dude! And everyone at the same time said, well, obviously the universe is hitting you upside the head with a 2x4. So, because he had introduced it to his system and everything, and I was like, dude, I'm off grid. I can't even charge my phone. How am I supposed to even access your course? You know? So he gets me a gig watching a house, which is really cool. Been going through this cleansing, basically, of my mind. I used to be a professional. Well, and just recently was pointing out you never used to be a professional. You just are not being a professional. Because I've gone from, like, sipping, like, $250, $300 glasses of wine with politicians to garbage diving, dumpster diving, you know, to flying a sign, working 12-hour shifts, or even have my own business, to flying a sign. And like, my designer label is like, you know, where'd you get that? Oh, from the C-Box. Oh, those are designers. I don't know that name, but it's from the C-Box. You know, blessings, basically. And that's what I've been living off of. It's just blessings. And kind of made me realize that maybe it's the universe. Make me realize that that it's not, we don't have to be, you know, we don't have to surrender everything, because how am I supposed to help others? Because my thing is, I want to help others. I want to do a podcast across country, and I want to call it Fading Glory, and I want it to show the real backbone of America. Because in my travels, I have met so many amazing elders, so many people who've had their own businesses from when it, America was way back in before when this bootlegging was a thing. And, you know, their story is just so amazing, you know, about their families. And it's like the houses on the side of the road that you're driving down, you know, you see these beautiful mansions or whatever, and they're all collapsing. And you're like, I wonder what the story is. I want to tell those stories before those stories are totally gone. And I didn't know how to process. I didn't know how to do that. And through Gandalf's teaching, through his course, I've got it, like, from A, B, C, and D. You know, now I know how to do it. I also know, I went to a DJ event, and I was like, the guys took me in, you know, and they were showing me how to turn tables. I was like, dude, back in my day, I used to spin records. I said, this is all computer now? I said, oh, dude, do you know how much frequencies that are good and, like, that could help awaken and decrystallize the pituitary gland, and I just could help, you know, get rid of the brainwashing that we've been put under, or the spell that we've been put under, you know, that I could use with music, you know, and have everybody happy and jamming and, like, release the chains that bind, you know. I mean, like, I could, like, oh, I know what I can do and I know how to do it, and it's just so awesome, and I'm so thankful that you asked me on your show, and I'm maybe rambling, but I am excited. I've got this, like, so happiness and joy, and you know, if my cup isn't overfilling, how am I supposed to bless others? And that shame about having money, that shame about, you know, just having enough, that was a spell I was under, you know, and that's a spell that a lot of us are under, because we believe those guys who have those three-piece suits, they know better than us. We believe those guys who are making the laws and they don't even follow those laws themselves, we believe that we have to trust, that we can trust them, or if our vote actually matters. You know, we believe all that bullshit, and it's all a spell. Oops, I said bullshit, sorry. But, yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Have you heard me in my radio show? It is uncensored. It is uncensored for a reason. We are adults here, so continue.
Sorry. I had a joke on that one. I'm like,
did I kill you?
Please. Well, as someone who was teaching art to teach, you know, kids, it's like, ooh, watch out what I would say. But so, yeah, you killed me on that one. But yeah, so I honestly, I've broken that spell. You know, I've broken that spell that there is no reason why I should first be under the illusion of our system was not broken. It was just that the politicians in it need to be voted out or whatever. And one team for another team. And it was like sitting here watching Dallas versus Pittsburgh. You know, I don't have anything to gain if I root for Dallas, and I have nothing to gain if I root for Pittsburgh. So why am I pissed off or put anybody down because they're voting for a different team? You know, same way with politicians. I've learned that through not having to have any access to the internet, no access to the phones, you know, being totally off grid, I have seen and lived and felt the energy, the different energies that are like, that are out there. You know, when I get on the internet, oh my gosh, I can actually feel it like drain me. And I can feel it trying to hypnotize me. You know, I've been the person that's gone down the rabbit holes, many a different rabbit holes, you know. And I've been the person who sat there and goes, well, protesting is right. And da-da-da, it's going to make a change. I'm just a useful idiot. That's all I am. And that's the perfect term for it, a useful idiot. Because that's what I have been. I was, for 6 years, you know, before 6 years ago, I was a useful idiot. I was campaigning for people who I thought could change things and who would change things. And then I'm really realizing that that person has never had a supper in their life. They don't know what ramen noodles is. You know, they don't care about the elephant. They side talk. They open their mouth and they talk about how they, you know, are heroes and, you know, how we should support them. But yet, go to any vet and ask them how much support they're actually getting. You know, they throw these million-dollar parades. You know how much money that $1 million, how many people that $1 million could feed? You know, all in support of that. Yeah, well, why don't you give that money to them and stop trying to tax them? How about we stop trying to do these wars? You know, that's another thing. You know, we have money to fund wars, but we don't have money to feed our poor. What the hell is up with that? You know, oh, yeah, yet we make laws to stop our poor from being able to go into a damn garbage can to get anything out of there to eat. Oh, no, you can't do that. We got to lock the garbage cans. It's perfectly good food. It just has a freaking bruise on it. Cut it off. Well, my God. But, no, they won't do that because that is not how this social structure is set up. And now I'm rampaging, and I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Don't apologize for being passionate on this show. My listeners know all too well when I go off on a one-hour tangent and I need a drink of water because I can't even.
Right.
Continue.
A stronger drink. I've been on the streets, okay? So I've been from the top and I've been to the bottom. And I tell you what, being with the top is the most... I would rather go dumpster diving than hanging out with a bunch of those people. And the only reason is this, is because they are all in it for some kind of satisfaction that their soul is lacking. And they don't realize that that black hole in their soul, that emptiness that they're feeling and they're trying to feel with some kind of perverse whatever, or give them power or whatever, that they don't realize that all that is basically they are lacking compassion. They don't know what real love is. They don't know what the light is because they have turned their back on they have made a life for themselves that is above us. They're on Olympia, and they're like, "You're gods. We make the laws." And it's true. They are gods. They make the laws, and they don't have to follow them. Have you ever seen any one of them put to the stake? No, but you saw Jesus put to the stake. That poor dude, man. You saw what happened to him. You know, he was trying to say, "Give unto Caesar what is due Caesar." What he was saying was, that motherfucker we don't have to pay him taxes. You know, he's not our king. You know, and that's what it is. They want us to believe that they're our kings, and they're not. They're not our kings. We have every right to be here just as much as they do. We have, as long as people stop bowing down to that three-piece suit, stop bowing down to Gucci. I don't even know what the fuck Gucci is, but stop bowing down to it. You know, stop it. Just stop it. Just look at the brother and sister next to you. You know, the real feeling and real wealth is within us. And that is why I love taking this course, because I realized that the only way we're going to beat them at their own game is by being able to bring the table. And if we can't afford the table, we're never going to be at the table. You know? And we've got to toss their game off our backs, because that's what it is. We're allowing them to play their games on our backs, the backbone of America, the backbone of Canada, the backbone of the world. You know, who are they to dictate who our enemy is? You know? I mean, like, I don't give a fuck what country you're from. God didn't create borders. Man did. You know? And it's true. He didn't put the lines on the globe. Man did. And it's man's self. And I don't just mean man. By the way, I'm not a feminist. But I am a feminist. Because I do believe that
classical
equal rights.
Classical feminism. Equal pay, equal work.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You know? It's like, why should we sit here and, like, bow down to, oh, well, that's so-and-so. He's a famous rock star. Or that's so-and-so. He's a famous movie star. I don't give a fuck. You know, what's he doing for me? Why should I pay his tax? I don't care. He ain't God. What's he going to do? Oh, but he's famous. I don't care. You know, in the end, we all fucking die, and you're not going to take a hearse with you. You're not going to have a U-Haul behind a fucking hearse. Period. You know, you're not taking it with you. The only thing you take is your self-worth. That's it. That is all you take with you, and the love of people around you. And what you've done, what have you done lately to help your neighbor? What have you done lately to help a friend? And I don't mean just, like, give them a dollar. I mean, what have you done to help change their life? And I mean, not talking about putting them in jail, you know, for stupid things like a warrant for not having registrations because they can't afford it, or, oh, they can't pay insurance. Well, they need to go to jail. They're a criminal. No, a criminal is the motherfuckers who are making these damn laws and getting away with it. You know, the criminal is putting taxes on us that the indigenous people cannot fucking afford. The criminal is the one who is allowing people to poison our water and just pay, oh, a $250 fine when you got 3 million babies dying of cancer. That is the fucking criminal, you know? So, yeah, that's how I feel. And I've got to become, you know, my wallet has got to become just as much as fat as theirs so that I can fight fire with fire. And I don't even want to fight. All I want to do is switch on a light and help my other brothers and sisters switch on the light. So that way we are all, can you imagine, you know, they're only like, what, a couple of 100,000? Dude, let's bring 8 billion to those motherfuckers. Let's storm troop Olympia, you know? What are they going to do? We shine the light. They can't hide in the little rocks and crevices anymore. You know, we stop bowing down to them. They can't stop us. because they cannot stop the light. And that's what I want to do, is I'm going to bring compassion. I'm not out here trying to save the world. I'm just trying to spread compassion, and I'm just trying to save humanity, because humanity is worthy to be saved, you know, not those dudes on God's throne who are making all the laws and have a spell over us and brainwashing us and institutionalizing us. And yeah, is it anarchy? Nah, not really. I think it's God's way. That's it. If God's way's anarchy, well, so be it, you know, but I'm not going to go down alone. They can't stop. They can't stop the truth, and they can't stop the light. And no matter how much fear that they try putting in to the people who are healers, they can't, no matter how much they have tried isolating us, no matter how much they've tried telling us that we're crazy and we're conspiracy theorists and we don't know better. Nah. See, that time has come to an end. That book is done. Welcome to Web 3, motherfucker, because we are about to rule the world. Change it. And that's how I feel.
Okay, so we're going to take a second. Now tell me how you really feel.
So I just want to do this like a podcast, and I want to immortalize the wisdom of the elders. And I want to teach children how to, like, you know, survive off grid, and how to make their own medicine, and basically to think outside the box. Basically, that's all. But they don't need the system, you know, that the system needs them. So, yeah. I feel like Malcolm X. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. And it's true.
Oh,
yeah, it's so true.
I'm cracking up over here. Fuck, I just love you. Oh, my God. Little firecracker. You remind me just like my fucking friend Red, like fucking peas in a pod. I'm going to hook you up with her after we're done this show. She does a show. She used to be on Freedomizer here, and her show is Journey into Freedom. And if you're into tarot and spiritual shit and stuff, you need to meet my friend Red Gypsy, because she also had been doing the traveling for a while. She also had a bit of a rough life. She also lives quite off-grid, and she also has a show. Her show is over on Freedom Revolution Network. I think she does it on Saturdays or Fridays or whatever. Anyway, I'm going to send Thursdays? I don't remember. I'm going to send you her way. I'll send you her profile after we're done the show tonight. And you go find her and start hitting her up and shit, because you're going to love her. So
I love her already. Red Gypsy was one of my aunt's name back in the day. So
there you go. See? Synchronicities. Holy shit.
Yes.
I like it.
And that's what I told my kids. I'm going to go be a gypsy after you guys have grown and take care of you and get your own families. And they did. My kids are doing great. And, I was like, y'all are all good. I'm out. Deuces. You know, they call me for my birthday. I call them for their birthday. And I'm like, how the grandkids? They're good. Okay, bye. See you later. Anyway, what are you doing, Mom? Oh, I'm changing the world. You know me. I was like, all right, Mom. I was like, well, I got to make it better for my grandkids. I got to make it better for grandkids, for seven generations. You know, I said, I feel bad I brought you into a world of slavery. You know, I feel bad that I brought you in such a corrupt world where we don't even realize that we're fucking slaves. But, you know, no, it doesn't have to be this way. And I'm going to change this shit before I die, because I've died seven times already. I still have a reason to be here. So, you know, let's bring it. Let's bring the light.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because it's like I'm listening to you and you sound like such an anarchist. And it's just like, did you know, just for funsies, anarchy comes from the Greek prefix an, which means without, absence of, and the Greek noun archon, master or ruler. So when we say anarchy, it actually it means without rulers, not without rules. So when we talk
without
about anarchy
rules,
in the humanity sense, anarchy is essentially the most, it's the ideal way that we want to go. If you want to check out Mark Passio at all, he's incredible. I mean, when you check out his later stuff, I suggest strongly that you start with podcast number one, because he talks about the left-right brain hemisphere. He starts going into occulted studies, psychology, things like that. He has a wide variety of topics, but if you pop in on his later ones, he probably spends half of his entire show now yelling at people because, you know, when it's like when I listen to you and, like, you know, I listen to the others in the class, it's like this is the problem that we're experiencing on a fundamental level. That I see you actually physically taking action. See, when we talk about the trivium, we talk about, you know, having your heart, your mind, and your actions in alignment. When you have those three things in alignment, things really manifest. We can think all the things all day long, and then things happen. But as we think, so we feel, so we do. And then when we manifest, you know, the thoughts that happen and our emotions, you know, we have healthy emotions and stuff, and then we manifest those things through action, then things really start to change. And this is like, you know, this is why I'm starting to get into coaching, like teaching courses and shit like this, is to get people to understand that whether you do it for good or for evil, if you think a certain way and you feel a certain way and you act a certain way, things are going to happen. And if you do those things among with other people, it's going to change how society is in the aggregate. Now, we could change that for the good or we could change that for the bad. Well, positive and negative. I mean, it really is, if you really, really start getting into occulted studies, there really is no good or evil. There is just knowledge and we can use it for positive or negative because there's supposed to be that balance.
Yeah.
But that's another discussion for another time. But it's like,
AC/DC.
You know, when I hear your story, that you're very passionate, that, like, you know, deep down, you have the right thoughts. You have the right emotions about it. And, like, this is another thing before I continue, is that, you know, people get really upset when you feel emotions like anger. Like, I can feel your anger through the phone, that it's like you have a justice, righteous anger through the phone, that you're tired of this bullshit. You're tired of being lied to. You're tired of lying to yourself. And actually, in Hermeticism, that's like the number one principle, and Freemasonry is to yourself. And you're done lying to yourself. You're done being told lies, and you're done lying to yourself. So going forward, you're no longer going to lie to yourself. You're going to speak the truth, get the truth, and act the truth, and manifest into reality actual change. And, like, this is what they're trying to prevent. This is why they have us so divided and fighting everything over absolutely everything right now, because they're currently working on imploding the banks. Because
yep.
people don't have an understanding, just like the problem you and I had, that we didn't have an actual fundamental understanding of the value of what money actually means. Because to us, it was the survival tool. Without it, we would die. To the elite, it's the mon eye. It is a replacement for the spiritual currency that Gandalf is starting to teach us. You know, that Mark Passio, like,
yeah.
he talks a lot about it,
yeah.
too, that this is, they've manifested a fake and put it in our hands and told us if we don't have this, we're going to die. And, of course, since we're spiritual beings, that means a lot to us, that we are going to give our soul in replacement for these little green pieces of paper when it shouldn't be that way. Instead, this is a tool. This is a tool that we can utilize to further ourselves and everybody else. It is the evolvement. We can utilize it to evolve humanity. And instead, we've been lied to. So it's really interesting to kind of, you know, hear your shift in thinking, and having experienced that myself, the shift in thinking, that it's like, if these assholes at the top can do what we're trying to do, you know, why can't we do that too? Why is it that they can do this, but we're not allowed to do this? And where is it, you know, in terms of, like, anarchy, where, again, like, anarchy does not mean without rules. It literally, according to the etymology of the word, the Greek translation, means no rulers, without masters. If we're all born equal, you know, and the Bible says, you know, one cannot serve two masters, what the fuck are we doing serving these little green pieces of paper, which is now going to be turned into the central digital banking system. So we're not even going to be having paper money for a whole lot longer. We'll have it for a while because they're not going to get rid of it right away. But we're not going to have it forever. And they're going to take that away on us, and they're going to put us onto this stupid little slave system where they're going to attempt to control your mind. And if you think other than what they say or think other than what they want you to think, you're going to be eliminated. And, you know, seeing you and seeing all these other people and manifesting reality with people who are tired of just complaining on the internet, tired of feeling shitty, they're ready to take action. And I really hope going forward that, like, you know, when you're doing more of your coaching and bringing forward solutions, like, especially like getting out of the system, because that's the one thing Gandalf is going to start teaching as a course now is, like, and a lot of people do this, but a lot of people don't do it right, I guess one could say, because there's a lot of, like, exploration and different ways to do things. But, like, you know, how he had mentioned in class today that, you know, he wrote a whole ass book on this. And his book was extremely popular. And if anybody wants his book, I don't remember the name of the book. I'll have to go find it in my files. And then you'll have to go buy it off him. Sorry, you're not getting it from me for free. You got to go buy it off of him. Get a physical or a digital copy. But teaching people the value of money, looking into things like agorism. If you've heard of Samuel Konkin and agorism, head over to libgen.is, libgen.is, download an agorist primer, and it's starting to teach you how to work in essentially an alternative economy, almost like a black market economy, but not. It's like the gray market economy where it's not completely illegal. I mean, anything legal is unlawful, and that's another discussion we can get into another day. That people need. Huh?
Yes. Yes. So, okay. So I have been traveling with travelers, all right? And there's a whole demographic of others.
Yep.
I don't mean like a lot of demographics. So this is what's bad, is I've seen more homeless people. Not homeless. I don't want to say homeless. Home free people. See, there's a difference between homeless and home free. Home free means that basically you're like, okay, you know what? I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight, but all I know is that where I lay my pillow, as long as I have my heart and as long as the creator is in my heart, I'm good. I'm home. So those are home free people. Those are people that realize that this society is beating the machine. Is not going to change the world. What's going to change the world is the ability to show people and prove people. I am 54 years old, and I have nothing, but I have a lot of wealth. Say I have nothing, I have freedom. So, you know, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. And you know what? I've lost everything, and I have come up out of the fire like a phoenix. And I am going to bring the fire, and with Gandalf's help and guidance, thankfully, I know now how to do so, because we are all phoenixes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, go. we are, there is an economy that goes on underneath, and it's not it's a community based economy. Like, hey,
mm-hmm.
sister, you know, I have this. And you have that. And, hey, let's make a stew together. You have the vegetables. I have the meat. Or I have the fish. Or, you know, let's bring something to the table. Let's gather together like a potluck. You know, I've been able to help feed people in the middle of the forest where nothing is there. Where nothing, as in, like, a grocery store. As in, nothing as in, we have no money. As in, nothing as in, but we have the ability to forage. We have the ability to be on public land, which is being taken away from us each and every day. Yeah, I can't even go camping anymore without having an ID card and a reservation. What that, America? What the fuck is that? I can't go to public land? The public land? I can't have a fire without a permit, and I can't get a permit unless I have a fucking driver's license. What the fuck? Have you all have been scared shitless of the fucking bullshit that they have been giving us to think that we have the right to take away our public land? What right do we have to go on the native land and drill a fucking pipeline that they don't even get no fucking money for, but they get the water poisoned. You know, what the fuck? Why do these utility companies that aren't even for utilities, they don't give it to free? Now, see, under the immaculate, taking the land or taking, what is that freaking word, where they can come in and they do stuff for the public. But that's supposed to be free for us, not for us to fucking charge those companies. Nestel, look at them, stealing the fucking water, you know, stealing clean, fresh water for years. Yeah, you tell them, girl. Stealing it from years from our public land. If it was us doing that, we'd go to jail. But Nestel, they get a fucking more permit. They get, oh, well, you can go ahead and get a permit. 5 cents a gallon. 5 cents a gallon. I can't even get a goddamn fucking bottle of water for 5 cents. And it's the bottled water that's coming from the fucking mountains that is public land. What the fuck? And that's what I got to say.
Oh, I absolutely love it. If you don't mind, though, we're going to take a quickie break, and then we're going to come back, and I have a couple questions that I want to ask you. So we'll be back in about 5-10 minutes here, guys.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org. Hey everyone, come check out the Proof Negative radio show here on freedomizerradio.com. Monday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, as we fight the New World Order and rock the health freedom world together.
Of all the grounding studies, the one that really got our attention is called Electric Grounding Improves Vagal Tone in Preterm Infants. In the study, 26 premature babies in an NICU were connected to grounding wires. The heart rates of the grounded infants stabilized, and their vagal tone, a critical measure of infant health, increased by 67% with grounding.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve Coagula. Solve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled. Snakes in the grass.
Son of position. Got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya right where I want ya. Like a raw lion in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goner. Can you hear me now?
Hey, drunk, all part of the game.
In the scene for so long, now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow the world with Satan's.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.webs.com. That's official, ninjascroll.webs.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Have you looked at the price of Bitcoin lately? Cryptocurrencies are the hottest financial investment right now. Well, what if you can get free Bitcoin fractions by having an app on
your phone or PC. Introducing Lolli, a website that rewards you with free Bitcoin pieces with your online purchases. You purchase from one of thousands of companies like Chewy, Old Navy, Groupon, and others. You get a percent of your purchase back in Bitcoin. Use my link on freedomizerradio.live or find me on Facebook for your special link to get started. Lolli, earn free Bitcoin while you shop.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to WeFunder.com/GroundswellCard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World on Against the Grain Freedomizer Radio, and we are back today with Mama Cat talking about her life story, talking about what she does, how she got to where she is today, and just kind of her journey into changing her mindset about financial freedom, about so many things. There's a whole ass list we could list, but we're just going to talk about that one for right now because that's kind of where we left off because, you know, fuck the system. I have a couple questions for you, and then I also want to read you something that's actually particularly interesting that might make you shit your pants just a wee bit.
Okay.
So when you were talking about your sweat logs, and this is live and it's recorded, so if you're not comfortable sharing any more details, just say I'm not comfortable, we'll move on, okay? So when you were talking about your sweat lodge experience, I'm kind of curious to hear a little bit more than that, because you were saying that before your daughter died, you were doing well, you had all your shit together, and then your daughter didn't make it, and then, you know, everything just fell apart, and you had this sweat lodge experience where you kind of had a lot of revelations headed your way kind of thing. Can you explain maybe a little bit more in depth kind of like the experience, where in the experience of the sweat lodge itself that like these revelations came to you? Like, how did that all happen?
All right, so you ready to go down the rabbit hole? Because
yeah, I'm
fully at my speed.
Good, good.
All right. So we'll go into the sweat lodge. There's a drumming. There's a singing. I'm sweating, puking, pissing myself because going naked and it's a very powerful ceremony. So it's not something that's like la-da, fun, guys, when you're doing mescaline. It is something to do with inner journey with, and you're meeting with the great spirit. You're meeting with the universe. So humble yourself. I went in, like, because I've always had a personal relationship with God. So I've always talked to him like I would talk to any other human being. So he's my father. He's my papa. I call him my papa. So I went in, I was like, hey, Papa, what's up? And he's like, blah, blah, I'm throwing up. And anyway, so that's called cleansing the demons. from yourself. So you bury this hole, you take this hole, and you puke in this hole, and you bury it into the earth, and that's where your negative energy goes, right? And then this is a beautiful experience. All right, so have you ever seen The Matrix? Now, if you have not seen
Yes.
The Matrix, okay, so you know where Neo is in that room, and he's seeing all his television screens of himself mm-hmm. being played out? All right.
Yep.
So if you haven't seen The Matrix, I suggest see it, because in that scene where he is seeing all of himself on all these TV screens, that was me. But it wasn't me seeing myself. I would see these TV screens from, and I could jump in of all these different lives, and I could jump in. It was like as soon as I looked at one life, I was being a mother giving birth. And then I was a baby taking its first breath. And then I was a rapist. I was a murderer. I was a sinner. I was a killer. I was a lover. I was a saint. I was a priest. I went through all these like TV screens. I'm not saying that I lived all these lives. I'm just saying when I jumped into the screen, I was living all those lives. And it was like as soon as my death happened and it came back, death happened and come back. My death happened and come back. And it was just like what seemed like eternity was only for split seconds. But I realized when I jumped into Katie, her karma, it was like, Katie was my daughter who passed. She was 7 months old and 9 days. She was 7 months old, 7 months and 9 days old. She died on my 33rd birthday. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks with her. Her eyeballs were cracking because I told death no, no, no. And I kept telling death no, I wasn't ready. When her eyeballs start sinking in and I was using my own tears to keep them moist, I finally asked Gabriel to take her. But it took that long because I was praying to God to take her. I was praying to God to save her. I didn't want to be a failure. And that was my selfishness. She was sticking on because of my selfishness. The hardest thing that is the hardest thing was letting her go. But as I let her go, the angel came. And as I'm holding her in my arms, after I use my tears to help stop her eyes from drying out, and she's screaming in pain, and I say, okay, God, I give up. You're not going to heal her. Go ahead, take her. And Gabriel came, and I saw it all. After living through that, and I realized I had a peace, but then I was still angry. I was like, why? So when I went through all these film footages of being the actor and not the director, I saw that Basically, she was living her karma. She chose me to be her mama. She chose that life for that little bit because it was going to, it cleansed her of all the lives that she had lived prior. Now, some people might not believe in reincarnation. It's cool. You know, but this is the way that I can accept it. And this is the way my vision was. I knew that Katie showed herself and she could help me and my family better from the other side. Now, I've died 7 times legally. And Katie was the last one that I died with. When I was having her, and I went in and I was expecting not to have even a baby live because she was diagnosed with anisocephalia. That was where the frontal lobes of your brain is gone. So had she gone through the birth canal, her head would have been crushed in and she would have been dead on arrival. It didn't happen that way. Her heart stopped. My heart stopped. I looked at my friend who was there with me, and I was like, well, ain't that a bitch? I'm dead. And the next thing she says that happened is that my eyeballs are rolling in the back of my head. She's giving me CPR. The nurses are running in, and they're storming me out, and they're taking me to the room to get emergency cesarean. When I come back, I'm being strapped down, and it's like there's this bright light, and all I see is this leather strap being put on my hand, and these hands holding me down, and I'm on a cross thing, and I can't see very straight. All I know is I'm kind of, I don't know where the fuck I'm coming from. All I know is that I'm like, people are holding me down, and I'm expecting a nail to hit my hand, and I start fighting. I'm like, I'm not your Jesus. I'm not going to die for your sins. Fuck y'all. And then my friend, I hear a voice, and she's like, Kat, it's okay. Kat, it's okay. Breathe. I'm here. It's okay. Just breathe. And they put the mask over me, and I go under. Okay, but I remember that. I remember when I come back, I was raised Catholic. So now all of a sudden I think I'm Jesus, and I'm like, oh, hell the fuck no. No, no. Fuck all y'all. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but no. And I've always had a really connection with the spirits, with God. And so... when I had come back, my heart was stopped for seven minutes. And anyway, so when I went through my sweat lodge, all the times that I passed legally, because I've been under the knife many a times, the first time I was 9 years old, now I was dead for 9 minutes. But when I come back, I never knew. I always knew that I just didn't want to fucking come back. I was like, why the fuck am I here? Why do you guys keep bringing me back? So... when I went to the sweat lodge, I remembered all those. Why? I remember why. It was like a... it was like clarity. I've got a purpose. And I want to finish my quest line. It's like being in a video game. You know, you get to a point in a video game... and, like, it keeps fucking you up. You keep fucking dying. You keep fucking dying. And you're like, no, I got to keep going on because I need to go on, you know? So that's what it was like. It was like, I don't want to be back here. I hate this fucking game. I'm going to throw my fucking controller on the ground. I'm dead again. And especially back in the Nintendo days where you couldn't save a spot and you had to start all over. Yeah, so that's where I was. I was like, oh, my gosh, no, I don't want to do this again. And so after the sweat lodge, I realized Katie was here for a certain amount of time. She's still here with me. And it's so, so weird because on her birthday and her death day, or I call it her resurrection day, because she died here, but she resurrected up there. And I've seen her grow. I get depressed. I get sad. I get, just leave me the fuck alone. I don't want to be near anybody. I just leave me alone. I just don't want to exist right now. I just want to mourn. And then I see her. I feel her presence. And she's grown. And she's been with me. So... when I went through that sweat lodge, that opened up that took away the stigmata that I've been born, that I was raised with, that, heaven's unreachable, and that, if you connect with heaven, you're a witch, and you should be burned to the stake and die, because, you know, that doesn't happen, you know? And it's like, dude, the Bible says it's okay. The Bible says God talks to us all the time, you know? But you know how many Christians actually read the Bible from front to back? I've talked to people, they're like, have you found Jesus? And I was like, dude, have you found Jesus? Because you wouldn't be asking me that question if you have found Jesus, because I know Jesus, you know? And Jesus is the resurrection. Jesus is here with us now. There is no, he's coming back and he dies and he comes. No. They tell us that they hang him up and across as in death mode all the time. So it gives us fear mode, you know. But they don't tell you what happens after he resurrected. There's a whole book about him coming back, you know. We all just sit there and go, oh, well, he's on the cross. And that's what they memorialize. That's what they brainwash us with. You know, they brainwash us with thinking that, oh, he's just always on the cross. And, you know, no, he's not always on the cross. And he didn't die for his sins. He died because he refused to pay fucking taxes. People, why did Jesus die? For our sins? No, because he refused to bow down to Caesar. He refused to pay taxes. So get it fucking right. And they won't tell you that because they want to gain your money. They want to keep control. They have been selling guilt for, 2,000 years? But Coca-Cola has been only selling for 80 years. And them motherfuckers are banking. You know? So, just saying. If anyone has a good plan, it's you know, Coca-Cola, because they got their shit straight. And as far as, like, the church, all they do is sell guilt and sin. Guilt and sin. Oh, and pennies for heaven. If you want a penny to heaven, I got give me $10,000. I'll show you how to get to heaven. Just give me the $10,000, you know, because that's how they are. You know, Paul robbed Peter because Peter should have taken over the church. And if you guys know about anything about the Bible, the King James Version, get rid of that. That dude was dying of syphilis. That's why he brought him up. Read about this. Read about where the Bible came from and who translated it. Because I love the Bible. It's a good foundation. It is a beautiful foundation. But the people twisted it. Those in power have twisted it. They have distorted the word. And the word is this, I tell you straight up, love thy neighbor. Don't pass judgment. Don't be a hypocrite. Because if you pass judgment, you're being a hypocrite. And those are the two sins that God will never forgive you for. He will never forgive you for being a hypocrite. And he will never forgive you for trying to take over his throne. Because I know what, if you try taking over God's throne, he's going to slap you down like a little bitch. And that's how I just said, that's just how I feel. That's what I learned. For my experience. Any other questions?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, God's hand is a pimp hand. That's strong, boy. Holy fucking shit. Oh. That is awesome. Do you watch a lot of YouTube?
No, I don't. I don't watch YouTube.
You
I don't watch. I have back in the old days, but like old days, like. But I'm an OG, so you know. No, I really don't get on the net that much anymore. For 6 years,
back when there was
I've
a star system, I remember that.
Yeah,
there's a fella called Rabbi Simon Jacobson at the Meaningful Life Center. He talks a lot about Kabbalah. I think you should check it out because I think you would find it extremely interesting because Kabbalah is like occult Judaism because, you know, there's Christianity, there's Judaism, and then there's Kabbalah. You might want to check that. I can send you the link afterward if you want to check that out. But I think, you know, from what you're saying, I think you would really be able to take your spiritual experience to next level starting this all these things like Kabbalah.
Sure, like I've studied from everything from A to Z, like from Anarchy to Zolar, and everything in between. Like I used to have this 5-bedroom house, and one of my rooms was like dedicated to just books. I used to invite, like, you know, most people, like, when the Jehovah Witnesses, like, knock on the door, like, I had 5 of their Bibles, they're the same Bibles, and the Mormons, you know, they knock on your door. Well, I got to the point where I was like, hey, so there should be another book here. And they're like, well, yeah, but you're a woman. You can't read that. And I was like, oh, I may be a woman, but I can fucking read. Can you not see? Because I take them in my library. You know, and they never came back. I was like, can we make an appointment for you guys to come back, please? Because I want to learn more. Well, you're a woman. Well, you know what? Just because my chestnuts are on my tit, just because my nuts are on my chest doesn't mean that I'm less of a being. You know, mm-hmm. This is what my dad says. My dad used to say, he's like, I don't give a fuck if your nuts are on your chest. Girl, I'm going to teach you everything I know because you're a mini me and you deserve to know everything I know. I want you to know everything I know so that way you can become smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blessed with that. People aren't blessed with that. Most people aren't blessed with parents that are like strong-willed, out-of-the-box thinking. You know, my mom and dad weren't hippies. No, hell the fuck no. But my dad and mom, they both grew up in the Depression. All right. Dad joined the Army. He volunteered for Vietnam because it was his duty. He was the last son. If he wouldn't have come back, his name would never have carried on. So he would not even have to join. My mom, she stayed with my dad. They were both married. They were married together. No divorce, no nothing. For 40-something years, almost 50 before my dad passed. But, you know, my mom, she was a virgin until she married my dad because she thought if you kissed somebody, then you'd get pregnant. You know, that was her mentality. You know, so my mom, when she drinks a margarita, she thinks she's got to pray to God. You know, just that. You know, it was my dad, when he came back from Vietnam and stuff, he was an alcoholic for a while. He stopped drinking because, you know, my mom was like, you're not going to fuck my shit up. And so, but dad would go to what was called training. So the military had this thing where you had to go for 6 months to go in the field, right? So dad would go in the field. My mom by herself raised us three girls. She was a waitress. Now, dad didn't get paid a lot of fucking money. Everybody thinks, oh, soldiers get paid a lot of money. Now, guess what? Reality check, motherfuckers. I'm going to tell you straight up, no gag order or nothing. Soldiers and military do not get paid bullshit. They don't get paid nothing. Nothing to give their lives away. They do not get paid. They are not heroes to your government. That your government's giving you lip service. Your government is telling you, oh, we take care of our men. No, they don't. They don't give a fuck about your men. They don't give a fuck about your women. They don't give a fuck about you. So, straight up. And that is where my anger comes from. Because those sideways speaking, fork-tongued motherfuckers have been sitting here running the country, and everybody's like, la, la, la. No, wake the fuck up, America. Because I'm telling you straight up, they don't give a fuck about you. You are a slave. And you will never be anything other than a slave. And if you are a threat, they will take your fucking ass out. Because they don't care. Care. They care about their wallets. They don't care about you. They're paying monopoly on our backs, baby. They're playing monopoly. And we are the little people on the little short, little, what the fuck things you call those little things that you move around? What are those things called? Pawns. We're the pawns.
Pawns, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We are nothing to them. Until you realize we are not important, they are speaking in tongues. Their tongues are forked. They are sideways speaking. If they cared about your elders, do you think they'd be in fucking nursing homes and then all their assets being stolen? Your government does not give a fuck about you. And no matter whatever way, I don't give a fuck if you're pink, blue, or green. They don't give a fuck. And you think the voting system even matters? Dude, it's all a play. It is like one life to live, except on the news. All right, check this out. I call it the Santa Claus syndrome. All right? So when I was young and I was in school, I was like 5 or 6, you know, and I got in a fight with this kid, right? Punched that motherfucker out, right? He bit me, and I fucking punched him. And anyway, I got suspended because they didn't see the whole thing happening. So it was all about Santa Claus. All right, so check this out. So mom and dad do the little Santa Claus thing, bake the cookies, put the cookies out, write the little fucking note and everything else, right? yeah. You know, news center comes on, oh, you know, this is a report. Santa Claus has been seen over New York, right? All right. How many times have you seen that? Santa Claus has just been seen over New York, and it's coming your way. So every little kid better get in bed because Santa Claus is on his way, right? You know, and you can follow it. Santa Claus is going around the world. It was on the news. You know, breaking news. Special report. You know, that's what I grew up with. Breaking news. Special report. Santa Claus. And it was true. You know, I thought it was true. So I got in a fight with the kids, right? And then my parents were like, okay, you can't say anything to your sister. And I'm like, hold up, what? No, Santa Claus is real, but you can't get into fights about it. Okay. So for another couple of years, I'm going on, you know, doing the Santa Claus thing, doing the cute girl thing, doing the it's a funny thing, little notes, cute things, keeping, I'm like doing like little American, like, you know, hip hop thing, you know, whatever. Yara, you know, Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy, Each Bunny, blah, right? And, yeah, so I get older. I find out Santa Claus ain't real. Tooth Fairy ain't real. Fucking Each Bunny ain't real. I got all these years of little notes from Santa Claus. I got all these years, you know. So how am I supposed to believe my parents now? How am I supposed to believe the fucking news? If the news is going to lie to me about fucking Santa Claus, what the fuck else are they lying to me about? I don't even know if they still do that anymore. But the Santa Claus syndrome. That's what I had. I was brainwashed under the Santa Claus syndrome because I believed that Santa Claus was a real thing because the news said it was, you know. The stores said it was, you know. So, you know, how can the stores and the news and the government even sending letters to the fucking Santa Claus? Even you mail a letter off to Santa Claus. And what was the thing, that story that you watched, the thing where, like, well, what was that freaking story, the black and white one that they always show about, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus? Yeah. With all that, and they are telling me Santa Claus is real. Now, don't get me wrong. I do believe that Santa Claus spirit is real, because I would tell my kids, look, don't tell your grandma and grandpa this, but I'm buying this shit for you. I'm labeling it under Santa Claus because that'll make them happy. But Santa Claus doesn't exist. I'm working my goddamn ass off to fucking pay for these fucking presents. So I'm just letting you know. I didn't lie to my kids about that shit. You know why? Because I didn't want my kids to be disillusioned and have their heart broken because they believed I was lying to them. I want to know that I'm real. I am a fuck up. I have no fucking manual to be a parent, but I'm not going to fucking lie to you. So your grandma and grandpa want you to believe it's Santa Claus. Just go along with it. But you see all these fucking presents? That was me, motherfucker. And that was your grandma and grandpa. That was not no motherfucking dude with a red suit and a beard and fucking, you know, fucking whatever, reindeer. That was me. Santa Claus is real, but in spirit, and the Christmas spirit, the Christ spirit, the giving, the loving, the, you know, the the cherishing of the moment, you know. But he ain't buying you a fucking presents. I am. There ain't no little fucking elves. Those fucking elves cost money. I'm just saying. I'm working 12-hour shifts. I'm just letting you know, you know. And I don't want you to think that I'm ever going to lie to you. So, Santa Claus syndrome. And that's what America has. It has the Santa Claus syndrome. Because they believe that these three-piece suits, no matter if they're Republican, Democratic, Peter Pan, or Georgia. You know, not Georgia. Whatever. Anyway, no matter who the fuck they claim to be, as long as they're wearing those fucking fancy-ass three-piece suits, and they got a fucking mouthful of fucking pearly-ass teeth, you know, have you ever noticed that? They got those choppers that, like, fucking look like Jaws. Yeah. If you ran into that in a sea, you don't want to run in. Yeah. So, I'm just saying, beware of those motherfuckers with those choppers, because that shit is fake as fuck. Anyway, any other questions?
Oh, I'm going to read you this really quick questions before, you know, you go and fuck off and do greater, better things. I don't know if you've heard of, like, I don't know if you've heard of Eddie Bernays, but he was the grandfather, so to speak, of propaganda in the United States, and he helped write and co-write 12 books. And I have synopses for his four most popular books, and I'll zip through these really quick. They're about 5 points each, so this will not take up too much time. But I think you're going to find this really interesting. In his book, Crystallizing Opinion, published in 1923, Edward Bernays outlines the principles of public relations and the role it plays in shaping public opinion. Here are some of the main points of that book. Number one, the importance of understanding human psychology. Bernays argues that in order to be successful in shaping public opinion, one must understand the underlying motivations and desires of people. By appealing to people's emotions and desires, one can persuade them to take a certain course of action. Number two, the power of propaganda. Bernays believed that propaganda, which he defined as the conscious manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses, was an essential tool for shaping public opinion. He believed that propaganda could be used for both good and bad purposes and argued that it was the responsibility of public relations professionals to use it ethically. Number three,
yep.
The need for two-way communication. Bernays believed that effective public relations required a two-way flow of communication between organizations and the public. By engaging in dialogue with the public and addressing their concerns and desires, organizations could build trust and credibility. Number four, the importance of research. Bernays emphasized that the need for research in developing effective public relations strategies. By conducting research in the attitudes and opinions of the target audience, relations professionals could tailor their messages to be more effective. Overall, crystallizing public opinion lays out the foundational principles in modern public relations and emphasizes the importance of understanding human psychology, using propaganda ethically, and engaging in two-way communication and conducting research to inform public relations strategies. Book number two, Edward Bernays' book, Propaganda, published in 1928, explores the use of propaganda in shaping public opinion and attitudes. The main points of this book are as follows. Number one, the importance of propaganda. Bernays argued that propaganda was essential for shaping public opinion and that it could be used for both good and bad purposes. He believed that propaganda could be used to educate the public, promote social causes, and influence public policy. Number two, the role of public relations professionals. Bernays believed that public relations professionals had a responsibility to use propaganda ethically and to serve the public interest. He argued that they should be objective, factual, and transparent in their communications with the public. Number three, the power of symbols. Bernays emphasized the importance of symbols in propaganda. He argued that symbols could be used to evoke emotions and create powerful associations in the minds of the public. Number four, the use of psychological techniques. Bernays believed that psychological techniques such as appealing to people's emotions and desires could be used to shape public opinion. He believed that by understanding the subconscious motivations of people, public relations professionals could create more effective propaganda. Five, the need for mass media. Bernays argued that mass media such as newspaper, radio, and film were essential for disseminating propaganda to the public. He believed that by controlling the media, public relations professionals could shape public opinion and control the public narrative. Overall, propaganda lays out the principles of modern propaganda and emphasizes the importance of using propaganda ethically and serving the public interest. It also highlights the power of symbols, psychological techniques, and mass media in sharing public opinion. Book number three. Edward Bernays' book, Public Relations, published in 1952, expands upon his earlier work on propaganda and outlines his approach to public relations. The main points of this book are as follows. The role of public relations. Bernays believed that public relations was essential for building and maintaining relationships between organizations and the public. He argued that public relations should be used to promote understanding and goodwill between organizations and their various stakeholders. Number two, the importance of research. Bernays emphasized the importance of research in developing effective public relations strategies. He believed that public relations professionals should conduct research to understand the attitudes and opinions of their target audience and to inform their communication strategies. Number three, the need of two-way communication. Bernays believed that effective public relations required a two-way flow of communication between organizations and the public. He argued that organizations should engage in dialogue with the public and should be responsive to their concerns and needs. Number four, the ethical responsibility of public relations professionals. Bernays believed that public relations professionals had an ethical responsibility to serve the public interest and use their skills and knowledge for the betterment of society. He argued that public relations should be used to promote social causes and contribute to public good. Number five, the importance of public opinion. Bernays emphasized the importance of public opinion in shaping the public policy and the actions of organizations. He believed that by understanding public opinion, organizations could better anticipate and respond to changes in social and political environment. Overall, public relations outlines Bernays' approach to public relations, which just emphasizes the importance of research, two-way communication, and ethical responsibility. It also highlights the importance of public opinion in shaping organizational behavior and the need for organizations to be responsive to the concerns and needs of the public. Number four, book number four, Edward Bernays' book, The Engineering of Consent, published in 1955, builds upon his earlier work of public relations and propaganda and expands upon his ideas and the use of psychological techniques in shaping public opinion. Main points of the book are as follows. Importance of consent. Bernays believed that in a democratic society, consent was essential for the functioning of government and society. He argued that public relations could be used to engineer consent by shaping public opinion and attitude. Number two, the use of psychological techniques. Bernays emphasized the importance of understanding human psychology in shaping public opinion. He believed that by appealing to people's emotions and desires, public relations professionals could create effective propaganda that would shape public opinion and attitude. And of course, number three, role of symbols. Bernays believed that symbols were powerful tools of shaping public opinion. He argued that symbols could be used to create a powerful associations in the mind of the public and evoke emotions and desires. Number four, the need for mass media. Bernays emphasized the importance of mass media, such as newspapers, radios, television, and shaping public opinion. He believed that controlling the media, public relations professionals could control the public narrative and shape public opinion. Number five, ethical responsibility of public relations professionals, and that's the same old thing. Bernays believed that public relations professionals had an ethical responsibility to use their skills and knowledge for the betterment of society. He argued that public relations should be used to promote social causes and contribute to the public good. And here's what's really screwy about Edward Bernays. If you actually hop over to YouTube and type in the BBC documentary, The Century of Stealth, Edward Bernays was a eugenicist, he was a psychological manipulator, and he did not believe that people had the ability to make decisions on their own. That was the biggest thing about his strategy, is he was an expert at laying out the options for you and allowing you to choose the options that they laid out for you. And you notice this a lot in schools. Here's your essay topics. You need to pick an essay topic that we've given you and write an essay on it. And then if you try and do anything outside of that, they say, no, that's not an option. Well, why not? Why not? That's what Eddie Bernays did. And he was in with the banks. He was in with the politicians. He was in with the big corporations. If you needed a means of making money, shaping public opinion, and manipulating people into what you want them to do, Eddie Bernays is your guy. And bonus, he was Sigmund Freud's nephew. So he knew a thing or two about psychology. That was his entire career. Even his daughter had said that he was kind of a really devoid moral being. He was morally bankrupt. He did what he needed to do to gain power. He manipulated people into gaining power. And it wouldn't surprise me if we knew a lot more about hypnotism and things that we think we know. But I'm going to get back to a couple questions here. I just wanted to let you know that. And you can, again, pop over to libgen.is or head over to Z Library if you want to read those books. There are some audiobooks on YouTube. You can type those in and listen to the audiobooks for free because they're old as shit. And, they're out of print and stuff now and have been for a while. So you can get your hands on that knowledge for free because more people need to start understanding the left and right brain paradigm that they are being put into, like you were saying before. It's the left, they're giving us these options and we're not, they're telling us like we're children. The left and right brain paradigm, that's not just necessarily the left and right brain politics, but the politics where it's us versus them and et cetera, where if people start finding the middle ground, things go a whole lot smoother. Anyway, you had mentioned when you were homeless And you were basically sitting on a bench kind of thing and mulling over life. And it's just like, either I OD and move on. What brought you to that specific spot? And how did you end up thinking to yourself, like, basically, these are my options. I die or I make something of myself. Are you still there?
I had to move in.
Okay, you're
to,
there.
Yeah. Are you here? You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. For some reason, you are just on the headphone. I don't know what the heck. It got switched to listening only. But you're here now. Because I was like, did she drop? Oh, no, that's why you had dropped. Did you hear my question?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did. For some reason, my phone dropped it. I'm out in the middle of nowhere,
okay.
Of course. So, you know. Yeah. All right. So anyway, so basically what happened is I got thrown out of my mom's house because I couldn't handle shit anymore. And I got involved with me and her. We've always butted heads. She's a Leo. I'm a Virgo. She's strong-willed. I'm strong-willed. You bring two strong-willed bulls together. Guess what happens? Anyway, so Four Locos does not help. Because I just had it, like, I lost everything, like, okay, so nobody thinks that everything that I had, all I had was in a trailer, yeah, but everything that I had, all my writings, all my awards, all my floppy disks, everything that meant something to me and was part of me and the books that I was writing, you know, was all gone, so... She was belittling it, and anyway, Mom, I love her, but I can't live with her, you know what I'm saying? So, she threw me out, it was cool, I stayed with some people for a little bit, stayed from house to house, I got into meth, and because I was having to stay on the streets, and I needed to stay up, and well, fuck it. I just needed to fucking stay up and be aware. And it wasn't like I was buying it. It was given to me. And it kept being given to me. And then I was like, no, fuck this. I moved down to the park. The park had been closed off. I started doing mushrooms, microdosing, and to help my thinking. And I walked away from all the handouts that were being given to me, like, here, take this, take that. And I was like, no. Oh, you got mushrooms? Okay, I'll take that. And then, like, I run off into the woods where it was closed off and nobody else could go. I knew those woods. But there's 500 acres. And for 26 years, I've been running around like a little elf. You know, and I've seen some beautiful things and spiritual things. And it's always helped me through my, like, when I went through depression, when I was by myself, with blah, blah, blah. But those woods were always sacred to me. So when they closed it off, I was like, oh, fuck you. So I crossed the fence. And I couldn't be found. I was microdosing. And one evening, I kept having that, you know, go without everything. Just take everything off. Go. And have faith in me. And like I said, I was down to my last $200. And I was like, I can't get a job because I'm sick of beating the machine. How the fuck do I get out of this shit, God? And he kept telling me, go. So I'm like, where the fuck do I go? And I had some friends, this dude Jared and his wife Christy, and I was like, they were like, get up here to love it. Come up with us and stuff. So I went up there, and they actually helped encourage me to go on my journey. And then I went back to Victoria because, you know, I still like family, blah, 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 you know, that those anchors. And then I'm like, well, you know, I got my daughters, and they're like, I don't want to stay there with them. Yeah, I don't... You know, I'm their mom. My job was to get them out the fucking nest, not for me to join their nest, you know. So I'm like, I don't want to be one of those moms, you know. And I was like, Well, I'm sitting there, I'm microdosing, I'm wandering in the forest, and as I'm sitting there, the fog comes in, and the fog comes in, it's a full moon, and I see, like, there's little droplets reflecting off the landscape, and I hear the, now that's a buck, all right? So when you hear, then that's pretty much, if you're on your rag, get the fuck out. But if you're not on your rag, because bucks will chase your ass. Been down that road. But so if you hear that, just pay attention and be still, because what I saw was this beautiful, I saw all these does coming out, you know, through the forest. And then I see this big ass buck. And I swear to God, it was all white. And it was probably the shimmering of the dew on his coat. And it was probably the way the moon was shining on it, but it was beautiful stag. And it had 12-pointer. I mean, beautiful. Like, if I was hunting, I wouldn't have shot it, because it was just so majestic. And there was this, like, silence all across the field. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching, because I'm, like, contemplating of, I'm going to just die tonight. Fuck it. I'm over it. Game over. I quit. I'm going to play another game. I'm over it. And this mystical stuff happens, you know, the moon shining through the trees, the glimmering, it was kind of like, I don't know if you ever watched the movie, Legacy, I guess, but the unicorns come in and play, but the unicorns weren't coming in play. It was beautiful. It's hopping. You know, it was so cold that you can see it coming through his nose in the fog. And all the does, because he's watching out for the does, you know, because it's that time of season. And, you know, and he sees me, and I see him, and we connect. I'm sitting at this table with my backpack, you know, and I'm like, wow. And he's like, you know, and they all walk through. I mean, it took maybe about 30 minutes. They're just walking through, and it's like 20 deer that I'm counting, you know, like coming out of the forest. And he's just standing there with all this dew just like glimmering. He's like shining. It's like a glow. I mean, like, there's this subtleness, and yet it was just like this aura of like energy that was just like get the fuck out of here. Just get the fuck out of here. Go on your journey. Listen to your spirit. Listen to God. And I was like, okay, all right. Just don't kill me. I mean, he could have killed me. So they all come through and just walk by. And I'm like, peace, brother. Thank you so much for your message. And so the next day I took a dart and I threw it at this homegrown map that I had of America. You know, it was an American map. I threw it at the map. And it landed to Roswell, New Mexico. I was like, all right, so I'm going to Roswell, New Mexico. And I checked it out, and I had a certain amount of money. I was like, cool, I got enough money to get a fucking bus ticket, I'm out of here. And that was what decided me, because I was going to either OD on drugs that everyone was trying to feed me. If it wasn't for the mushrooms, I probably would have been stuck there, because I'm allergic to heroin, so that would have killed me instantly. But, I mean, like, there was meth, there was cocaine, and it was like, everyone's trying to give it to me, and I'm like, no. I'm going to sit back, hide in the woods, I'm going to do this microdosing of these beautiful mushrooms, and that's what saved my life, basically. Because I would have ended up dead somewhere, somewhere, you know, and not give a fuck about dying, and not, nobody would have known. You know, and I was on my body. And it was like, you're going to either die. That's what it was like. You told me, you're either going to die here or you're going to go on your journey and you're going to do what you're supposed to do here. And I was like, okay. Well, I've been dead before. I'm cool with that. No, you're not cool with that. If you die here, you're not really going to die here. You're going to be shipped in a fucking hospital, stuck in, you know, with needles and everything else. Do you want that? No. I've been there, done that, don't want to be stuck in the hospital. Yeah, right, I'm out. Peace. And if I die, I'm dying on the road, I'm doing what I love. So that's how I felt. And that's what caused me to be on my journey, with desperation.
That's a hell of a journey. I'm not going to lie. I've cried. I have laughed this entire phone call. Oh, fucking shit. This woman's been through hell and back.
Yeah.
You know what's really funny? When you were talking about your story, that, like, every time... Okay, have you ever seen Harry Potter? Have you read Harry Potter?
Probably my daughters loved Harry Potter. Yes.
You know what made me so laugh so hard? Is every time you said, like, you were talking about Gandalf, or you said his name, that he would just, like, pop up. You know in, like, Harry Potter, like, at more towards the end, I mean, I'm not comparing Gandalf to Voldemort. I'm just saying it just reminded me of that. But it's just funny because it's just like it just popped up in my mind. Like every time you said his name, he would just pop up. And like towards the end of Harry Potter, when they're like running away, and every time they say Voldemort's name, then suddenly the bad guys just like pop up and try and wipe out Harry. It's just like it just reminded me of that, and I was trying so hard to like keep my composure. I'm like, holy shit! It's like, you know, Gandalf. I don't know if you ever like if you ever seen or like watched Harry Potter, if you've read the books. But, like I was thinking of that the whole time. I was like, that's just so funny. It's just so funny. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
so,
I love...
What?
I said I loved Harry Potter. My kids, my daughter was, like, in third grade, and she ran it. She read all of his books. I was like, yeah. No, read the books. I was like, read the books. Yeah, don't watch the movies.
They're missing a lot of stuff in the movies, which is really sad because, like, the books have a whole lot more context and in-depth and things. And you look at the books and you look at the state of the world today and you're like, shit. Anyway, you had mentioned that you did, like, tarot and stuff. Like, are you still doing that? And, like, before, you got about 10 minutes left here or whatever. Like, where can people find you? Like, what are you doing now that people can come find you and find your services or whatever you have to offer?
Okay, good question, because I don't even know where to find myself. If anyone wants to find me, I've actually started a Facebook that's called Fadin, F-A-D-I-N, Glory, G-L-O-R-Y, because that is going to be where my podcast is going to start. So I do card readings still. I've actually started practicing again. They're medicine cards, though. They're not just tarot cards. I'm actually working on my own tarot deck. But but now I'm working with the medicine cards because I am like, I love animals. So medicine cards have really, I'm really interested in them. Actually, the deck of cards that I did have for tarot, they were burned by an ex-boyfriend who was a jerk. But we won't go into there. And anyway, so I was gifted some tarot cards a couple of years ago on the road at Slab City by this guy on New Year's Eve, in fact. And but they have this masculine orientation. And I can't. You know, because you're supposed to be gifted your medicine cards. You're supposed to be gifted tarot cards that you read. And the guy gifted them to me, so now I'm just waiting for somebody else to give them to because they're very masculine. They're called the Golden Dawn, and I'm just not like, I can't do it. So I'm actually now starting to create my own True Life cards, which thankfully through the class, through the AI thingy and stuff, I'm actually like, I was playing around with it. I was like, ooh, so I'm going to start doing my own tarot cards so that I can do it. But I do medicine cards. So they basically, and I do ruins, I do bones, I do dominoes, I do playing deck cards. So I'm really good with, actually, I don't even need the cards. I just need to talk to somebody. But people feel more secure with a visualization. So I do the medicine cards, and that basically is like about animals and stuff. So animals that come into your life, what your animal tribe is, and so forth. And so it's just like I can't even get on it 10 minutes. But, okay, so if you want to reach me, I'm thinking you got to hit my email up. Because I haven't done anything yet. So there's the Facebook thing that I'm trying to start. which is Fade and Glory, but I don't know how that long that's going to last because I just started it today. But if you want to reach me, you can reach me at Pause, P-O-S, 8, the number 8, Vibe, V-I-B-3, at gmail.com. Because I'm actually, Mama Cat's cool, but Pause 8 Vibe is where I'm trying to go flow at. Because I want to be the positive. I don't want to be a mama. I want to be a positive. And so, Pause Vibe, P-O-S 8 V-I-B 3 at gmail.com. You can hit me up there. If you need to hit me on Facebook, it's Fadin, F-A-D-I-N, Glory, on Facebook.com, whatever. I don't really like Facebook, but it's the same. This is temporary for now. But, yeah, it's all – I'm all in a cocoon right now. I'm trying to figure out my way. But, yeah, I'm going to Fadin Glory to help the elders immortalize their stories, and I want to do a Pause 8 Vibe, DJ Pause 8 Vibe, and I want to do that for to bring the frequency and light into festivals. So, yeah.
Just as a side note, if you're interested, we do have some spaces on Freedomizer Radio.
Really?
We do. I can hook you up with our station guy, the owner of the network, if you want to hit him up, if you're interested. I'm not saying you have to, but if you want live radio experience, I'm just saying, you can come hang out with me and the Freedomizer team.
I would love that. I would totally love that. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, then I will get you
that.
The information sent.
Cool. That sounds beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want to share before I let you go this evening? Because I got another guest coming on here in about 10 minutes, and I got to have a quick commercial break before he comes on. But I want to give you the chance that if you have any closing remarks, you know, up to and including fuck the government, I will let you go on.
No, Let's start. Not fucking the government. Getting bored off our backs for this government. And let's start building up something. Let's stop this stagnant tree and let's, like, build this new tree. Like, I've been in the redwoods and they got beautiful trees. And I've seen where the stump is dead but there's a new tree growing out. And, like, we all know this system ain't working. So let's make something positive. You know, let's make something for the people, by the people. And fuck the motherfuckers that want to keep it as a way. You know, and that's it. Yeah.
I like it.
Let's listen to the wisdom of those who have had to build this country up. Because without the backbone, shit, we'd all be jelly.
That's awesome. Well, I want to say a big thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your story, and I look forward to seeing you on class on Monday, and then you can tell everybody how you totally ripped the head off the lion, man. This is great.
Girl, I'm totally thankful for you and grateful that you allowed me to be here. And to all your audiences, Sam is the bomb. Just letting you know. She's helping to change the world. She's a seed. She is a phoenix. She is going to shine bright. Thank you for the sample today.
Yeah.
All right, you have a good night.
You too.
I'm going to listen to the rest of your story with Rob because, man, Rob is the bomb, too. He's going to be making great moves.
Yep, I'm going to have him on the show at some point here because he's got a hella good one, so he's required. This is his requirement. I'm going to make Gandalf make him to get on my show before he's allowed to graduate. I'm just saying.
Awesome. All right. Well, you have a good night, sweetheart, and thank you. And to anyone who's listening and still tuning in, Jesus, may you realize that you are valuable and step into your own power. Because without you, we will not be able to change this world.
I love it. I love it. Manifest action. Okay, everybody, we're going to let Mama Cat go. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to try to get Rod on the line. He's going to be talking about taxation and mortgages and a bunch of other fun stuff. So we will be right back, you guys.
I'm excited. I haven't been at McDonald's for the last 20 years. I wonder what changed.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my Lord, what happened in here? What's up? I'd like to order a Big Mac menu and two cheeseburgers if possible. What the fuck is these farting noises? Oh my God, what is this shithole? This guy is brain damaged.
Seems like you haven't put a step here in a while. This McDonald's is only for the fat guys. You need to have over 35 body mass index. This means you have to be in severe obesity. You get a special member's card.
And what are you doing in this place then? You are not fat.
I'm ordering for my fat uncle. He is like a 40. He can't even step out of his bed anymore. But come with me, let's order at the self-service terminals. I can pick for you and show you how it works. Here is the kiosk. You can only choose between three different menus.
Wait, what the? Monster Mac menu, 7 stairs burger, 4 liters of Coke, 500 grams of fries. Quarter nuke menu, quadruple pounder, 2 times 5 liters jerry cans and 1 kilogram of fries. Bro, this ain't possible. Eating these menus will give you a free ticket to the hospital.
Yep, but don't forget this is a fat-only place restaurant. These guys are crazy. My uncle's favorite is the mega cheesy menu. This one's crazy mate. 2 giant burgers and some cheesy cheese fries.
Okay, let's order the Monster Mac menu. At least it's possible to finish. $99, this is ridiculous. The inflation gone crazy. Okay, let's click next.
Welcome to the sides.
100 nuggets box. 25 chicken wings, 35 cheesy rolls, 200 mini meatballs. Oh my Lord, man. This is mad. If people were to see this in 2022, they would have gone super crazy.
Yes, for sure. I wonder what YouTube comments they would have wrote. Lol.
Let me take the chicken wings. This is the best in my opinion.
Welcome to the ice creams. That's the last step. This is also mad, but the best one is the double nuking cream. This one obliterates your day, but it's delicious.
Okay, let's go for that. $276, are you kidding? This is 5% of my wage already. I'm not going to eat here anytime soon again.
I don't think so. You haven't tasted yet. You will see, mate.
Here is your meal, sir. Have a nice one and don't forget to rate 5 stars.
Oh my God. This is impossible.
Do not worry, brother. You will succeed. Just don't think about it. Eating is so damn nice. Trust me and give it a go.
Finally, the day is finished. I will enjoy my quarter nuke menu.
Wait, Wajak, is that you, bro?
Of all the grounding studies, the one that really got our attention is called Electric Grounding Improves Vagal Tone in Preterm Infants. In the study, 26 premature babies in an NICU were connected to grounding wires. The heart rates of the grounded infants stabilized, and their vagal tone, a critical measure of infant health, increased by 67%. With grounding.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Oh.
Hello, everyone. I want to introduce you to our friends at Marty.com. At Marty, you can stock up on all your pantry items and other household items for way, way cheaper than traditional grocery stores. I like that most of the items are organic. Also, I really dig their 1 cent deal of the day. It changes every single day. I recently snagged a 10-ounce bag of dog treats for Chewbacca for a penny. Normally, they sell on their site for $7.99. With the upcoming food shortages, this is my favorite place to stock up on canned goods. If you live in the mountain or Pacific time zones, you need to get with Marty.com, M-A-R-T-I-E.com. Look for our link on our FreedomizerRadio.com website and get a $10 free just because I told you to go there. Marty.com. Great deals, good feels.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve Coagula.
Solve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled.
Snakes in the grass.
Son of position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast.
I got ya
right where I want ya. Like a raw line in the field, I stalk ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goal.
Can you hear me now?
Drunk, all part of the game.
In the scene for so long, now it's time to open up your eyes. Look at how you're living, just to follow where we're Satan's.
And the new norms, the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Hello, everybody. We are back for the third segment, and we have Rod on with us right now, and he... he's going to pop in, and he's going to talk to us about mortgages and taxes and all that legalese stuff that everybody is craving to know but has nowhere where to start. Because, let's face it, like we were talking about with Mama Cat over the last 2 hours, these buggers at the top, they sit there and lie and lie and lie their faces off. Meanwhile, they cornhole you into trash. So welcome, Rod.
Hello. Welcome, so, yes, I know someone who pulled a house out of foreclosure using the courts, and it took 10 years. There's litigation in quite a number of court stories, federal and state and bankruptcy even. So that was quite a story, and I was quite, I'm quite familiar with what happened. She began by suing under the Truth in Lending Act, which is a federal act of Congress. The point of it was to make sure that consumers could shop around for loans by comparing apples to apples. So they have to disclose certain things, the annual percentage rate, the finance charge, the total amount of payments, stuff like that. And if they don't, then Congress authorizes the borrower to sue for rescission. Well, first thing they can do is give a notice of right to cancel, which is supposed to be by the end of the third business day after the disclosures are, after the loan is consummated. If they don't, then you can I think it's 3 years from that. From that point to sue for rescission, and you've got 1 year to sue for damages. And so she did that. And one impression that I got was that federal law is too complicated for federal judges to understand, because there were certain points that seemed obvious that the judges said, no, it's the other way. But then, if you don't agree, you can appeal, and that's a kind of a slow process. You've got 3 months just to write the brief, that's if you don't ask for more time. They're quite generous about giving more time. Oh, I'm not, you know, I'm not an attorney. I don't write my, you know, my school. This is a complicated issue. I need more time. By the way, they do not ever cut you off by saying no more time and it's too late. They always say, no, we won't. If you ask for 30 days or 60 days or whatever, they might say, no, we won't give you that much time, but we'll give you, you know, one more week. They don't just cut it off. Part of the reason for that is that the courts of appeals are deciding law for everybody. It's precedent for the entire circuit. We have, at the federal level, we have districts. The first court, the trial court, is the district court, and then after that is the circuit court. So they've got about, well, what is it, 10 circuits. Of course, you're not supposed to litigate for the purpose of just delay. You're supposed to litigate for the purpose of getting to the bottom of some legal question and getting your recourse. The whole point of the courts is I've been wronged and I'm standing up for myself and this is what happened and this is why the other side is wrong. What should pay me?
Mm-hmm.
Or make me whole in some other way. Either way, the old common law in England, there were courts of law and courts of equity. And I'm not sure about the history, but there are two different sets of people in two different buildings. You can go across, you might sit in the court of law and then go across the street to the court of equity to do something else and come back. The court of law could only award money damages back when money was a real thing, like gold coin. And courts of equity could do everything else. Make this guy stop cutting off trees on my property. That would be court of equity. And there's different rules. There are maxims of law, like you have to come to court with clean hands. He who wants equity must do equity.
Mm-hmm.
And part of I looked into that. Clean hands. And part of that is you cannot use the courts to maintain an unfair advantage that you got. Anyway. Okay. Right. Of course, the law. And you may have heard the words chancellor, where the court of law had a judge, the court of equity had a chancellor. And the courts of law had to follow precedent, and sometimes this produced results that seemed unjust in a particular case.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's for fairness, let's do this. So they say, let's look at the equities of the situation and all the other things that might influence fairness. And, of course, the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. So there's a saying that justice, in course of equity, justice is measured by the length of the chancellor's foot. It's like everybody's got their own foot measure instead of a standard. So there's disadvantages either way. So she sued under the Transit Truth in Lending Act, and it went to after appeals, which took it was 10 years total for the whole thing. At the end of that, they said that the appeals court said that the lower court did not have jurisdiction because she notified the wrong party. She should have notified, because they sold the loan. And so do you notify the original lender? Do you notify the one who's got the loan now? And she notified the wrong one, although I think she actually notified both of them. I'm not sure. But they said, okay, after all this time, years of litigation, whoops, doesn't count. Then there was, she assigned or conveyed or whatever, 10% of it to someone who was in bankruptcy. And so that put a hold on a sale. Yeah, normally there's a foreclosure. It's different in different states. Colorado is unique. It has a public trustee. Most states, the traditional way was to do a judicial foreclosure so that the lender would sue the borrower and say, okay, I've got, we made you a loan, you didn't pay, and here's the statute, and so we get to have the property sold. And I think was in California, there were so many, not the 2008, but the financial crisis before that, whenever that was, I think it was in the 80s, 90s, there were so many foreclosures that the legislature invented a non-judicial foreclosure. Boy. In Florida, they had a thing called the Rocket Docket, where they were expecting to spend, I think it was, 15 minutes? I can't even 15 seconds. It must have been 15 minutes for each case, you know, like a traffic ticket. And they just barreled the whole thing through. But, of course, if you know about appeals, you can get a little bit of justice. Okay, so... Yeah, California invented the non-judicial foreclosure, which is where they simply send you notice, oh, we think you owe us this and you haven't paid, so now we're going to sell it. And they sold it. Used to be at the courthouse steps of Ma. In this case, the sale occurred in the private law office on the seventh floor. And for notice, because they're supposed to give notice to the public so that anybody can come in and bid at the auction. That's how you get a fair price. Of course, if the auction price is higher than what's owed, then they're supposed to refund you the difference. So there was some bankruptcy court. I think there were two different people that she assigned percentages, and they went through the bankruptcy thing twice. It's been called an automatic stay, and then the other side can move to lift the automatic stay. And then you could argue. Now, apart from the Truth in Lending Act, some people say, well, the borrowing process itself creates money. And I'd like to get to the bottom of that. I do know it's standard information that you can find in textbooks that there's a textbook called The U.S. Financial System. It says that whenever the Federal Reserve lends money to Congress, that new money is created.
Mm-hmm.
And you might wonder, well, what would stop this from just being inflationary? Because now there's more and more money, which supply and demand, and if there's more of it, then the value of it drops. What, is there any force pushing the value back up? Or you would think when the loan gets paid back, and that would be when Congress pays back the T-notes and T-bonds. Are the same kind of thing, just for different time scales. Less than 6 months, it's called one thing, 6 months to in 1 year, something else. I think it's 5 years. It's called a bond. Same thing. So it's where you borrow a piece, that's where the national debt is. You buy a piece of the national debt and then the Congress pays it back to you out of tax revenues or wherever. So the ability of Congress to do that, that presumably reverses the process that occurred during the loan, and that reduces the money supply. So that keeps our money from deflating. That's the upward force that keeps the value of the dollar up, is the ability of Congress to pay back these loans. So I have not got any solid information on whether the money is or is not created during the lending process for a private mortgage. I can read all kinds of stuff, but it's hard to get really solid information.
Mm-hmm.
The courts call this the vapor money theory, and they don't like it. And so if your foreclosure is in that state or jurisdiction, and this is all kind of USA centric, but there's going to be similar things throughout the English-speaking world. You look up the requirements for they'd normally be doing a non-judicial foreclosure. So you look up the requirements. There has to be A, B, and C. And so you would allege, A didn't happen, B didn't happen, C didn't happen. That's if you think that it's more likely than not. That's true. There's a rule that says you're not supposed to allege anything that's not more likely than not to be true, although I've never seen that enforced. So you say, okay, here's a document that says that the notary, well, maybe the notary wasn't, maybe there's something wrong with the notary's commission. maybe the notary, it very often happens, people do not sign in the presence of notaries. That's the scandal called robo-signing. The banks had a lot of things, a lot of mortgages to foreclose on, and they didn't have their paperwork right, so they'd hire document lending, this DocX, document preparation, sorry. There's a company, I don't have the name of it right now. I think it's called DocX. And some of the people who worked for it went public or at depositions. They said what really happened, and they were not following the rules at all. They were just creating paperwork to fill a hole or cover over a hole. So maybe that happened. And then you get into discovery. And when you have discovery, you have three kinds of things. You can have admissions, where you say, please admit that is true. The purpose of admissions is to narrow the controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So the people will, litigants will willingly admit things that aren't in dispute, in theory. And you're not supposed to use it to win your case. You don't say, admit that I'm right, in theory. But you can certainly ask. And then there's interrogatories, and you get any number of admissions, but you only get a certain number of interrogatories, like 25. And then you can ask for more, of course. And you should say why you need more and why you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Why 25 wasn't enough. And that's other than the yes or no question. And they can be compound as long as they're related. In other words, tell me the name and address and phone number of each person who has knowledge about this particular thing. That's all one question. Please identify every document, right? By name and title and date it was written. And then there's, you can also enter onto land to inspect things if you need to, which is doesn't really apply to mortgages. And the other one, okay, admissions, interrogatories, and document requests. You can ask for requests for production of documents. So, you know, you can say, it'll be pretty obvious, but could also say, show me the document that proves that this notary's commission was correct, was proper, or any memoranda that were made. And you can ask for things that may or may not exist, you don't know. And then if they don't come up with it, IBM was famous for a tactic. They would give you a truckload of documents and they would shuffle all the pages.
Hmm.
Just get it lost. Okay, so that's not considered cool now. So if they don't give you what you, and the only thing that a bank will give you for in foreclosure is they'll give you the loan history, the loan history, which is payment history. They'll give you the closing documents and probably multiple copies of the closing documents. And they'll give you the payment of the loan history, the repayment history. Despite she asked and asked and asked for the complete loan, the general ledger accounting entries. In college, we were told that every business keeps a general ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And so in discovery, you ask, please show me the general ledger accounting entries covering the inception of the loan, everything about the loan starting from the beginning, the day one when it was issued, or if there's anything before. If for some reason there's anything before the date on the loan, you know, there might have been somebody moved money from one account to another in preparation for the loan being made, whatever. No, they just don't do that. And I think they said, we do not keep general ledgers. And that was a sock dollar, as Mark Twain said. A bank actually admitted that they do not keep a general ledger. Wow. So the only thing they ever come up with is the repayments. So this has a bearing on the V for money theory, that they have something to hide because the money did not come from where they said it came from. And, okay. Yeah. So if you are not satisfied with your discovery, then you can have a motion to compel discovery. And judges don't like wading through this stuff, so they push it onto the parties as much as they can. Okay, I asked for on this date, I asked for this, this, and this, and here's a copy of the request, and then this is what they gave me, and not satisfactory for this reason, because this question wasn't, you know, nothing came, was responsive to this question, and so on. The judge should compel, you know, say, well, now you've got this many days to come up with that document, or a statement that it doesn't exist, or something like that. Yeah, so you can go to federal or state court. If it's state court, it'll be the state where the defendant resides or does business. And every company will have a state of incorporation, so you could go there. They probably did business in your own state, so you could do it at your local county court. You rarely have to make appearances. Everything's pretty much done by mail order. Over federal issues. 28 U.S.C. 1331. Any cases arising under federal constitution or treaties or whatever, which don't really pertain to or federal law, which is acts of Congress. Of course, the federal courts have jurisdiction. Under 28 U.S.C. 1332, if federal courts have jurisdiction, if there is interstate parties, if there is no state in common between, if plaintiff and defendant are citizens of different states, there could be multiple plaintiffs and multiple defendants. And if there's one state that a plaintiff lives in and a defendant lives in, then it's disqualified. So there has to be a complete separation of diversity of citizenship between plaintiff states and defendant states. Normally there would be one or two borrowers and one. One or possibly maybe the original lender and the current lender, and there might be another one in between. And so there should be diversity. And then I think they can have jurisdiction over any kind of thing that would have been in any state law. There's also a rule number 1367 that says they've got a jurisdiction over anything that's sort of entangled with the snow in the first place. Ancillary jurisdiction. Okay. What am I going with this? My friend finally settled. And you may wonder how a case can take 10 years. What do you still have to talk about after 10 years? And it turns out the litigation itself generates more litigation. You can litigate about all the judge and others. That's what appeals are all about. In failure of discovery. Often there's a summary judgment. More cases are settled by summary judgment than by going to trial. And this is where I should mention the 12b6, failure to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So it's a motion, rule 12, that's the FR. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12b6 says that you can move to dismiss if the defendant can move to dismiss if the complaint fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. So if you're suing about something that, even if everything you say is true, the defendant doesn't owe you anything because the law is not what you think it is, or and that happens particularly if people don't know how to write these things, they don't include the facts that need to be there. Sometimes people will say, a constitution says this, constitution says that, and therefore I'm right and you should pay me. Wait a minute, you missed what they did. You know, what did they do to hurt you? And if it gets past that stage, and sometimes the lawyers do not even do that because that cuts down on their billable hours if they can go ahead and litigate farther. Then they don't get cut off at the knees. So they've got a conflict of interest there. Okay. Then there's summary judgment, which is supposed to be after discovery is complete. And after some discovery. The point is that the evidence that's been come in so far, which is mostly going to be affidavits or declarations. Affidavits are a sworn statement in front of a notary, and the notary, you're supposed to actually sit there and swear in front of the notary, and it's stamped and all that. The legislatures came up with a rule because our attorneys were too inconvenienced by trying to run around finding a notary at 5 o'clock. They said, okay, you can have a declaration. You don't need a notary. It just has to have certain words on it. I swear under penalty, under penalty of perjury, the above is true. There's different states, federal has different language on that, different magic words. So you can have a declaration that's considered evidence. There's a famous case, Kennedy versus Pagliaro, that says statements of counsel are not evidence. And in that case, the attorney hadn't sworn to anything. He was just making an argument, and that did not count as evidence. So based on all the evidence on file, there's no gray area. One side is clearly right. The other side is clearly wrong. Therefore, you should have judgment right away. That's what summary judgment is. Yeah, there are a couple of Supreme Court cases that discussed summary judgment. There was one about Matsushita Radio, I think it was. There was a Japanese radio company that had underpriced their radios, intending to drive the American radio manufacturers out of business, after which they could raise their prices as much as high as they liked, and you know, the competition was gone. And the judge said this was implausible that they would do that because the numbers didn't work or something like that. So there's some sort of plausibility requirement came out of that. It's not entirely clear what criteria are for plausibility, what you look at to decide whether something is plausible or not. Anyway, and if you allege fraud, then there's a higher standard of plead and prove. The pleadings are the initial statements, the allegations, well, I think this happened, and then the proof is, of course, sworn evidence. So if the evidence is so one-sided, obviously one side has to win, the other side cannot, and then you get summary judgment if they ask for it. No material facts in dispute, and the one side is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. So you would oppose summary judgment by coming up with the evidence of your own, and you can use, that's what discovery is for. Is, well, I don't have all the evidence to prove everything because they got it, so I want it. So you say summary judgment is premature because they haven't come up with the discovery I asked for. So the company finally settled, the bank finally settled on an agreement that she would pay back the principal, but not the interest. And that is exactly what she asked for in the first place, what the Truth in Lending Act says. So it only took 10 years, but she got exactly what she asked for. So she got clear title to the house, and that was a happy ending.
Was she able to stick in that? 10 years was a really long time.
Yes, yes. Very important. She had possession the whole time.
Okay, good.
Very important point. They did file for eviction, and that was a scare. But she filed something else, and the day before something, I've forgotten. The judge said, "Oh, never mind."
Oh. Good. Yeah, I've heard a few stories where people, you know, end up and they end up winning, but they get kicked out of their house or forcibly removed or something like that. And it's a happy ending, but it's not as happy as the ending as it could have been if, you know, they would have been allowed to stay in their home. So, back to you.
Yeah. The eviction is a separate process from the foreclosure. Foreclosure is all about who's got title, and eviction is about who's got possession.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the eviction court in state court. She asked for a clarification of the ruling to say that they did not rule on title, only possession. And the judge said no, because it's clear as a bell that only possession was decided. And this was on audio record, but he didn't put it in writing. And then literally across the street, the federal court, what do you suppose they did? They said, we're not going to rule on your title complaint because the state court across the street already did that. So here's these two judges across the street from each other saying exactly opposite things. Apparently in American courts, bells are not very clear. So that took some time to sort out.
Because, possession is 9/10 of the law, so that's how they get you, is they lie and they get you to leave, or they make you leave and then they finish taking over. But, yeah.
A friend of mine who was quite a bright guy, he had most of a PhD in physics, and he worked at CERN, the Center European for Research and Nuclear in the bordering, I think it's France and Switzerland. Right guy, he had a house and he messed up. He messed up business wise. He couldn't make his payments, and he assumed that the way it works is from the bank shows up and knocks on your door and say, "Okay, time to go," and then you got to be out. He did not realize there's a whole court process, so he just left. He didn't know any better. I remember a lady in England who was an old lady who was in a hospital, and I don't know if she didn't have any place to go back to or what, but she just refused to leave her hospital room, and they couldn't do anything about it. So, possession is 9/10 of the law, and I guess litigation is the other 1/10.
Because here they'll just trespass you and kick you out. They'll come in and physically remove you.
I heard about an American in a Canadian court who says, I stand on my Fifth Amendment rights, and then the judge said, "You don't have any." There was an essay that I ran across many years ago somewhere on the internet titled "Brainwashed Canadians." And it said, Canada does not have a proper constitution. And in the USA, they went through a process of ratification. And ratifying is where you give assent, before you give authority retroactively to something that was done without authority. If your agent, states delegated agents to amend the Constitution, amend the Articles of Confederation, instead they came up with the Constitution, which wasn't what they were authorized to do. And so it had to be ratified by the voters in all the states. The word ratify also appears in the Uniform Commercial Code. If someone claiming to be your agent signs, if you're out of town and your roommate gets a water bill and you say, "Oh, I better pay this," and writes a check on your checkbook, when you get back, you can either say, no, that wasn't me, it's a horrible problem, or you can ratify it and say, "Yeah, that's okay." If they're going to do that, they should identify themselves. Instead of writing your name, which would be forgery, they should write your name by their name as agent. Anyway, so ratification. So they said that Canada did not have a ratification. They had a British North America Act, which I guess was an act of Parliament in England, and that's not the same thing. It's still the authority comes from Parliament. But it was when they make a list of the queen or king's titles. One of them is dominions over the seas. I suppose Canada might be one of the dominions over the seas. I haven't really looked into that. Same with Australia, of course. The same. There was a lady, Eugenia La Bozetta, who said there are no laws in Ohio because Ohio didn't properly make it as a state There's some historical works about Ohio. She even talked to the detectives who said the same thing. Thing is, started in state court. Lawsuit is started in state court, but the federal court has jurisdiction. But it could have been started in the federal court. Then the defendant can remove the federal court. And there are certain requirements. The federal court should have, it has to be a case that the federal court would have had jurisdiction, like I said that, if it could have been brought there in the first place. So that would be a federal law or interstate parties and more than $75,000 in controversy. And litigation about a house, the value of the entire house is the value in controversy, not just the part that would have to be agreed from one to the other. Okay. So there's a and there's a clause, I think, that says that in-state defendants cannot remove. You have to. So maybe you think you're not a citizen of that state. Maybe, you know, it all depends on the facts of the case. Everything depends on the facts. You got a case. Particularly if you're in Ohio, you say, well, I'm not a citizen of Ohio because Ohio wasn't properly formed into a state. And you get to make the court decide on that before they can decide whether the federal court has jurisdiction. As someone wrote once, the judge doesn't want to deal with the mess you're trying to drag into this courtroom. All right. I think I ran out of things to say about that. Do you have any questions?
There's just a lot that I'm letting sink in right now because, you know, this is the kind of information that I wish a lot more people knew about, especially going forward with the economic turn that's happening. And there's going to be a lot of, I mean, there was already, like, you know, with the boom with the whole COVID thing, you know, everybody was going out and buying houses, and suddenly our money is becoming more and more worthless. Like you're saying, they're printing it off, and it's a system of madness that's been created to keep people essentially enslaved and confused. And if you actually try and fight back, it takes you 10 freaking years just to have any sort of, you know, solace, any sort of remedy, you know, that it's just like... This is the kind of stuff that we're going to need very, very soon going forward, because when they start tanking the dollar, foreclosing on everybody's homes, and big government is going to come in and start doing a big sweep, and then they're going to bring in this digital currency kind of thing, it's just like, I'm going to, like, after we're done here, I'm going to take and snip this piece of the audio either tonight or tomorrow, and I'm going to send it to you for you to keep in your file so you can share with folks that you want as well. But as for questions, I don't really have any at the moment. I'm just kind of, like, I've heard this a few times, but to hear it in different ways, and just the reality of everything that's sinking in is just like, man, like, this is information that, like, I might even need soon, which is really disappointing and unfortunate. But, you know, it is what it is. So.
Yes. Although we're all obliged to obey laws, we're all presumed to know laws because the ignorance of the laws. Ignorance of the law is no excuse, and I saw the case came from. A fellow had paid money to someone else thinking that the law required him to, and then he discovered the law did not require him to pay, so he wanted it back, and the guy said no, so he sued him, and the judge said, well, your ignorance of thinking the law required you to pay when it didn't, that's not a grounds for recovery. That's not a reason why he has to pay you back. So that was the foundation of the ignorance is no excuse. I think it's been applied way beyond that. All this knowledge is withheld from us. The government monopolizes our educational opportunities during the first 18 years of our lives. Mm-hmm. They nowhere present, and all this information, which we are obliged to know, is withheld from us. And presumed to know, is withheld from us and kept for a separate school called law school, which is so expensive that it's it's prohibited. The average person cannot go to law school. And they don't let the public in anyway. You have to be individually accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. And, you know, if you're in court, you can say that, well, the reason I don't understand legalese is because the government monopolized my educational opportunities until I was 18 and withheld all, after which I had to go to work, and withheld all knowledge of law. So sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of due process is that the defendant has to understand each and every one of the steps taken against him. And,
yeah.
Well, I don't understand. I cannot say I have a good amount of information about success rates of people just standing on "I don't understand," but it's very powerful. Bill Clinton, by the way, and Hillary, when I saw one of his depositions, start by saying "I don't recall," but and then he tells a story. I don't recall, but generally, he said, well, were you in the room when this happened? I don't recall, but generally, I would be in this room when something. But he, you know, the actual meat of the answer, if you look at it as a lawyer, is "I don't recall," and no one can prove, you know, what someone recalls or doesn't recall. So,
mm-hmm.
pretty much the end of that. I don't understand. I don't recall. How about this? I'm not 100% sure that I understand. I'm not sure 100% sure whether I understand the question or not.
Mm-hmm.
How do you plead? Well, I'm not 100% sure I understand the question. Oh,
mm-hmm.
there's a thing called the de facto officer doctrine, and that it says if someone is not properly in office, maybe they didn't get elected, or maybe something funny happened, or maybe the person who swore them in wasn't properly in office because they didn't get elected. They just showed up and said, okay, I'm presiding judge now, whatever. You're supposed to raise that issue before otherwise engaging with the officer. Otherwise, the issue is waived. So your first thing you say to any official, if you say anything to any official at all, should be, are you properly in office? Because that raises the issue, and you don't have to have a complete discussion of that subject right then. But you've raised the issue, and you can continue pursuing that litigation. Well, I need discovery. Show me the documents to prove that you're properly in office. You know, when somebody gets a government job, there should be a paper trail. If somebody signs a document, the moment before they sign, they're not in the office, and the moment after they sign, they're in the office, right? Or they'd swear in. But if there's a swearing-in ceremony, there will be a written record of it. And that's supposed to be filed somewhere like Secretary of State. It's supposed to be available in the file. There was a problem in Oregon where there's a Milt Mitchek wrote a book called Vultures, a little booklet. It said that the judges do not have their proper oaths of office because the words "and impartially" were left out. I will fairly and impartially or something administered. Obviously, it didn't match what the Constitution says, the state Constitution says it has to do. So, the Chief Justice of the state, he made an issue of it in the Supreme Court in that state. Sent out email to all the judges that they should retake their oaths of office. Whether they did, of course, I don't know. But it's a thing. So, and then if someone signed a document that says, okay, they're in office, they've been sworn in and all that. Well, was that person properly in office? I want to see the documents that they put them in office. And that should have been signed by somebody else, and well, they should have been in office. There should be a chain of documents. And that chain of documents should go back somewhere to either, they should connect somehow to the state constitution or the federal constitution. Where else could a chain like that start? Who was first properly in office? How did they get properly in office without, you know, any paper trail of that? So I want the complete chain of documents that connects you back to the state constitution or federal constitution. So, you know, a question, how do you plead? Well, if you say nothing, they say you have the right to remain silent. What if you do? Well, and then say, oh, I'm going to enter a plea for you. Well, they're not supposed to waive any of your rights. And if the judge enters a not guilty plea, I'm not a huge expert on this subject, but I've read some, and it's worth saying. If the judge enters a not guilty plea, he will be waiving the right to plead not guilty by reason of insanity. which maybe you weren't going to do, but you don't want him waiving your rights. So you could at that point say, excuse me, you're under arrest for impersonating a judge because you just waived one of my rights, and I'm sure that a real judge would not do that. And I'm not sure how the where the conversation will go from here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. In order to legally complete an arrest, one of the two things is supposed to happen. Either you're supposed to place your hand on the arrestee's shoulder, or the arrestee is supposed to acknowledge you as the, could say, will you submit to my authority as the arresting person, or must I place my hand on your shoulder? Of course, as a judge, they won't do that. They can say, well, bailiff, please take my hand and place it on this person's shoulder. If you won't do that, okay, bailiff, you're under arrest.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, if the arrests were recognized as valid, then they got to drag in a magistrate. Fortunately, you're in a building full of them to hear what your complaint is, and, you know, either arraign or not. I'm not sure whether they have discretion to just ignore it. So that'll be fun times. New process. In a book on civil law, they said there are several meanings to the word civil law. There's civil as opposed to ecclesiastical, civil as opposed to criminal. But the one of interest is the Roman civis versus the barbarians. So that Roman civil law is the law of Rome, as opposed to English common law, which came from the judges, and somehow it bubbled up organically from the people, more or less, of Roman usage, whereas Roman law is all about the dictator and the gods, I suppose. So due process. There's a Roman civil law due process and an English common law due process. The Roman civil law process due process is very simple. Notice and opportunity. Notice that there's going to be hearing and opportunity to be heard. English common law includes due process, includes the right to confront your accuser, the right to remain silent. In Rome, they could torture people into confessing. I'm not sure. Something like that. So right to remain silent, right to confront your accuser. There's a bunch of others like that. And if you read about federal law, particularly about administrative things where you have a dispute with one of the agencies, you know, the EPA said I've got something on my land and I don't, whatever. Then they say, they keep talking about notice and opportunity. So that's a clue that the federal law uses Roman civil law. And, yeah, here's a good question. There's a doctrine of parens patriae, which is the state is the parent, which is what they use, I'm pretty sure, for taking away kids.
Yep, parens patriae, absolutely. Because I remember when I was taking criminology in university, they went over that one many, many, many times.
Mm. Okay, so here's a question. It's an American-centric question, of course, but they say that they govern by consent of the governed. Okay, when did we, the people, consent to be governed by the principle of parens patriae? And what's the document that reflects that consent?
So far as I understand, is we never really consented. The king just kind of declared that, and then it's so shall it be.
Okay. I mean, you know, in the first place, Rome invaded Britain in the first and second centuries, and then the Romans invaded in 56. So I'm not sure exactly where parens patriae came in, whether it was the first and second century or 1066, but either way, that was not a choice of the people. That was an invasion. That was an imposition from outside. So, and then particularly south of that border, we the people, kicked out the king, had a revolutionary war, and the king signed the Treaty of Paris, where it says, okay, you've got 13 independent colonies, you're not under me anymore, good luck. So now you've got a traditional legal system based on a king, and there's no king. So now what, and somehow they say, oh, well, the state took their place. Really? How'd that happen? And they say, oh, well, there was, you could have voted, there was elections, and could have voted, so that's all you need. And it was advertised in newspapers. Somehow newspapers are tied up with the formation of legal system. There's a lawyer with 35 years experience who retired. His name is Eduardo Rivera, and he started studying the Constitution. And he said, well, I don't think he quite said it this way, but an honest document always calls the same thing by the same name. He was struck by the fact that it says President of the United States and also says President of the United States of America. Well, what if we don't just assume those are the same thing? And he read it carefully, and he says, oh, there's two different offices, and they even have two different start dates. One of them is elected, and the other is appointed. One of them is the head of government, and the other is the head of state, which is more familiar with the Britishers, because the queen or king is the head of state, and the parliament is the head of government. And Rivera said it was, the way the Constitution is written, it's ambiguous, and they could have had two different presidents, but George Washington chose to combine those two offices. He says that George Washington whispered his oath of office to limit the number of witnesses of what was said. Okay. So two different offices. So he appointed himself. I forgot which is which. He was elected one office and appointed himself to the other. And supposedly it was from this that Hitler got the idea. Somebody asked Hitler, how did you get the idea? Because he was chancellor, and then he combined that with some other office. Where did you get that idea? He said, from the Americans. So all the presidents since then have followed George Washington's example. It would be interesting to run for president, and here's my campaign. I'm going to be the president of the United States, and my buddy over here is going to be the president of the United States of America, and we're running on that ticket. That would be interesting to see what happens. I mean, not that anybody would really, not that you'd win, but it'd be interesting to see what kind of buzz would be generated about it. What would they say? So Rivera said there are a number of things in the Constitution that he ran across that were not what he expected. And most of them I do not remember what it was, but he does accept students. Declaration of Independence, the organic meaning that's when they organized government. Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance, and the Constitution of September 17, 1787. And if you doubt whether these are, like, common statement is that the Articles of Confederation got repealed when the Constitution was ratified. Show me where anybody repealed it. Well, I just started having that automatically. Well, if you look at the United States Code, Congress makes acts on subjects. Change the tax law and say, okay, well, change the tax law that says this law is now that law. This line is now says that, or they change, you know, they're going to create the Environmental Protection Agency or whatever. So they do things, and in a year they could cover a great many subjects. So how do you find the law on a particular subject? You have to go through everything Congress has done, and everything that started that. So Congress appointed a committee. I think it was Congress appointed a committee of lawyers to add them all up and make books sorted out by subject matter, and that is the United States Code. In each title of the United States Code is one of the subject title 26 is the Internal Revenue Code. There's 50 of them. And for some of these, Congress has said, yes, we like this summary so much that we're going to enact that into law. So if any flaw is found, any discrepancy between the work product of this, you know, what's in that title and what Congress actually did, well, we're going to say the title is good. And that's called passing into positive law. So on on page 1 of the United States Code, you can find a list of the titles with little asterisks to show which ones have been passed into positive law and which have not. And Title 26 has not. So if you want to find the actual law, you have to go back to the... And you can find in 1939 and 1954 and 1986, they say Congress passed the Internal Revenue Code. Well, we already know that having passed into positive law, so what did they do in those years? You can find it. If you look at the beginning, it says, be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives in the United States in General Congress assembled, I think it says. If they wanted to fund a bridge, if they be it enacted by blah, blah, that the sum of so much money is to be allocated to building a bridge. So here they said, be it enacted, blah, 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 that the following may be cited as the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 or 54 or 39. And then it's the Internal Revenue Code. Well, what did they actually pass as a law? Basically, they're saying this bunch of words may be quoted by this title, by this name. They didn't actually say this is going to be the law. They're just saying that this following may be cited as.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually find law, you have to look back to the Act of Congress where they passed it, which begins in 1913 with something called the Tariff of 1913, where they imposed the income tax. And that was the first one after 1895. In 1894, income tax was passed. And then in 1895, it was thrown out by the Supreme Court as unconstitutional. The reason being that it included a tax on the rent from land. Okay, there's supposed to be two great classes of taxes, direct and indirect. The tax is supposed to be one or the other. Direct taxes are taxes on land, or back in the slavery days, taxes on slaves, which count as real estate, of all things. Slaves count as real estate. All property is divided into real property or personal property, for whatever reason. I ran across that somewhere. So a tax, a capitation tax, a head tax is a, and there generally is no federal property tax. And the reason probably is there's a rule in the Constitution that all direct taxes have to be apportioned. There's an apportionment process that I've seen where Congress did in the mid-1800s, Congress did impose an apportioned tax and said Alabama pays this much and Georgia pays this much. And then it was up to the states to sort out how they were going to tax the counties and the people to give that much. And that was cumbersome or whatever, and they didn't do that again. So all direct taxes must be apportioned. All indirect taxes must be geographically uniform. So a tax on transporting persons by rail must be the same in Alabama as it is in California. But a tax on transporting persons by rail versus transporting persons by bus, those can be different. And so it has to be, the uniformity, it has to be geographical uniform. Okay. Now, which of those is the income tax? Well, the Supreme Court said because there was a tax on the real estate, on the rents from land, that burdens the land, and that makes it a direct tax portion, so they said this is no good. And so in response, Congress did two things. The Spanish-American War was coming up, and they said, what if we were in the middle of a war? So how do we fund this? We could pass another income tax, but what if we're in the middle of a war and Congress and the Supreme Court throws out our new income tax for some reason or some similar reason? So they came up with the 16th Amendment. The 16th Amendment, there's been a lot of argument about what it means. And the federal courts, the circuit courts, I talked about the lower court is the district court, the trial court, and then there's the circuit courts of appeal. Since we've got a bunch of time, Congress could, consistently with the Constitution, have never created any federal courts at all. And then all federal litigation, all acts of Congress would be litigated in the state courts, and the appeal would be to the U.S. Supreme Court. Those are the only things that exist necessarily. Congress chose to create the federal district courts and the courts of appeal. Okay. So, directing or the circuits, the different circuits, has said different things about what the 16th Amendment means, and some of them are directly mm-hmm. opposite each other. And one of them quoted the U.S. Supreme Court. And again, I'm seeing that federal law is too difficult for federal judges, too complicated, because they took where the Supreme Court justice writing the opinion had basically quoted one of the litigants. And he said, here's their argument, but that argument is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But they missed the fact that it was a quote, and they missed the fact that he said it was wrong. He just took the argument as quoted and said, oh, the Supreme Court said this, the exact opposite of what they ruled. And that's on the question of whether the direct tax, whether the income tax is direct or indirect. Yeah. And that case was Bushaber versus Union Pacific Railroad.
I'm going to have to cut you off, though, because we've got about 30 seconds here left. You want to come on again next week and finish this?
All right. Okay. Very
perfect.
Good. Very good.
Perfect.
So one other thing, my friend might be willing to help other people. So get in touch with
Sam,
and we will.
Perfect. Perfect. We will stay in touch. Okay, everybody, we're going to head out for the evening. So we've got 20 seconds here left. This was Rod, and he's been talking about mortgage and taxes and stuff. We're going to have him on next week to finish this because this is extremely interesting. So we will catch you guys again next week, Friday. Have a very happy Friday, and have a good night.
All right.